Welcome to Newscast, episode 33 for Saturday, December the 18th. I'm your host, Nathan Mustafa. With me today, Andy Gergen.
Hey, Nathan, what's
Gergen
going on?
Gergen is dead.
I'm alive.
Gergen's still dead. We're talking to his ghost. Neil Ronahan.
Hello.
And special guest, very special guest, Mr. Grant.
I'm special.
Grant, yeah. this is your second episode of the newscast, but your first in like 31 episodes or something ridiculous like that.
Yes, like it's been
March,
a while.
April.
Mr. Zach Miller is in Hawaii.
Zach Miller is dead.
Yeah, Zach Miller just drowned in Hawaii. Sorry,
Miller
Zach.
Miller is dead.
I won't start that again. No, let's not start that again.
let's not say something.
Actually, might be the chances of him being dead are probably higher than the chances of Andy being dead last episode.
Fair point.
I'm just saying.
My internet connection is a little more solid now, so hopefully, at least it seems to have
alive.
Been. So here's hoping that my call lasts for the duration of the hour-ish podcast.
Do you want to start testing your internet prowess with the news, Andy?
Hey, I would love to do that.
Go.
Before we do that, we should probably set up the episode a little bit. This is going to be a feature episode, so to speak. We're going to have a little bit of news and downloads as per usual in the first bit, but before too long, we're going to kind of put a halt on that and hop into what I would refer to as the first of two parts. That's my personalized title for it. Of the 2010 best of list for the newscast crew.
Yes. And Grant and Carl.
And Grant. and Carl Castaneda, who you may recall founded RFN. Well, not founded. Hosted RFN for forever and a half, like 7 years ago. Carl will be joining us next week.
In 2 weeks.
I had a gigantic scare related to Carl. There was an internal email thread going on in the staff email. And then people posted the PAX panel. And up until that point, I had seen a picture of Mike, and for some reason, I thought it was Carl. And so I saw that video, and then I heard Carl, and I saw that it wasn't who I thought he was, and I just flipped the hell out. I felt like my mind had been violated.
It's really weird. It's really weird meeting people that I've heard on podcasts and didn't know what they looked like.
I guess. I mean, see, when I met you guys, or when I saw you guys briefly, some of you at E3, I hadn't seen you, so it wasn't, weird to me.
Yeah.
But, this is seeing, a book character on the cover of the book, and then seeing the movie of the book, and you're like, what the hell?
It happens every time you see a radio DJ in real life.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They always have a face for radio, for the most part. So,
I'm not saying that about Carl.
No. No, podcasts and radio are different.
Right. Podcasts are just a bunch of suave...
Podcasts are full of hot people.
Very beautiful men.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But anyway, this is going to be the first of two parts for Game of the Year. We're going to have in each episode, we're going to go over some news. Probably not that many what you're reviewing stuff. Mainly because it's kind of the end of the year. We don't have as much stuff to talk about. But...
Except for those of us that have put off our reviews endlessly.
Yeah. I mean, there will be reviews from us trickling in. It's just that we've gotten to the point where none of them are really that interesting. So unless something's interesting, we're not going to talk about it for the rest of the year.
Save the least interesting for last.
Or for never.
Save the least interesting for newscast.
Yeah. let's go ahead and hop into some news here. First up, we're going to talk about a little bit about the NPD numbers for this month. Well,
November.
Actually, for last month, for November 2010. Basically, we're looking at the DS was the top-selling video game system of the month. It sold 1.5
It sold 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42, right?
Yes, exactly. It sold a curse. we're looking at about 1.5 million DS systems. And about 1.2 million Wii systems sold in November, which is down slightly from last month or from last
year.
November of 2009. But overall, still pretty solid for Nintendo. They had three exclusive titles in the top 10 with Just Dance 2,
Nice.
Wii Fit Plus and, where is
DKCR?
DKCR, thank you.
Yeah, Donkey Kong Country Returns. It's good to see it up there. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think Kirby was up there at all, or even Wii Party.
No.
Or any of their other fall releases.
Well, and it's also worth noting that this is the first month we're getting, not the first month, but this is among the first months we're getting the new formatted NPD numbers, which combines all of the different SKUs for a particular title, which means Call of Duty Black Ops sold, you know, a jillion copies because all of the different consoles were combined.
Yep.
So the Wii numbers factor into the fact that Call of Duty Black Ops was number one, although my best guess is they don't factor in a whole hell of a lot.
Nah.
Same with Madden 11, which placed fourth, and NBA 2K11, which finished ninth. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit finished seventh. All those have Wii versions. Once again, I'm not going to go out there and say the Wii versions contributed too much to those standings. They did comment and say that if they did it the old way, Halo Reach would have finished 10th, but because of the new method, it did not place in the top 10.
Oh.
Is that right, or did I have that wrong?
No,
that seems right. It does seem right, yes.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, what do you guys have to say about, I know 360 was kind of kicking a little ass this month. I think they were the only system that was improved from 2009.
I'll go out on a limb and say I will eat my words a little bit about Kinect. I've said from the very get-go of Kinect and Move that neither one would sell or be worth talking about a year after it launched, and it looks to me like the Kinect may be actually proving me wrong on that. Move doesn't appear to be going down that
Kinect
path.
Seems like it's got a great holiday pull, because anybody who wanted to buy a Wii for their kids has already done it. So now I think Kinect is the thing to get. So we'll see if that keeps going next year. But it seems like a holiday thing.
I mean, the one thing is that, like, I mean, obviously it's having a much better launch than Move. But
sure.
I mean, the whole thing is, will it be able to last? Are they going to have enough pull to keep it going on through the year? Or is it just going to be like the Tickle Me Elmo of, like, this holiday season?
Well, that all depends on what kind of games come out for it over the course of 2011.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
I think what they're hoping to do is sell a giant glut of them to the casual crowd, and then something is going to come out later, some big exclusive title, and you're probably not going to need Kinect to have it, but you're probably going to want to have it.
Yeah.
And then they're going to try and get that extra, you know, boost from the core gaming crowd.
In all honesty, a lot of the Kinect games that they showed off at TGS, like from the Japanese developers, like what was there? There's
Project
Haunt.
Eden. Oh no, that wasn't there. I'm sorry.
I forget all the games that were shown off, but there was like the one that's like Steel Battalion for Kinect, and they had the one. I think there's something from Grasshopper. There's something from Sega, and those were the first games that actually looked like they might be interesting. Except for, it should be noting that I don't think any gameplay has been shown from those games. They were basically just like, this game's going to come out on Kinect.
It's coming.
Done. Yeah. Like, when I actually see, that's the whole thing, is I want to see a normal game from that system that makes the camera work in a way that's not just like, look, guys, I'm boxing, and it kind of sucks.
Well, and the problem is it can only really register those more sweeping gestures, because, like, you look at the spacing between the dots it's reading you with, and like, it won't see finger movements, obviously, you know. So then there goes the hope of, like, I'm going to pull a trigger and it's going to do that in game. You won't see that.
When you look at the kind of games that have come out on the Wii over the past 5 or 6 years, and you look at the ones that have some sort of a cross-market appeal with the core Xbox user, there aren't very many good ones. Like, there aren't very many gamers' games that have really successfully used motion control on the Wii over the past, you know, five, six years. And some of that may be due to the fact that those games just aren't made on Wii generally, regardless.
Well, I mean, I would say, Twilight Princess being a GameCube port and all, that's still a gamer's game, and it used motion controls, Galaxy.
But
Metroid
Prime 3 is the best example. But I wouldn't say Zelda used it well. You shake the remote to attack, aiming your bow was pretty cool, I guess, but really, like, that's not that essential.
Well, I mean, we just got James Bond. I mean, wouldn't you say it has a fair bit of appeal to the Xbox audience?
That could be the first really great example based on the reviews I've been reading and everything.
We're talking about maybe 10 to 15 games over the course of 5 years.
Yeah,
am I at most. Am I off base in saying that?
No, I think you're right.
That, and you know, you also wouldn't be off base if you said that's not what the Wii is about, because it's not. So
yeah.
That's not really what Kinect's about either.
Yeah, no, but it's what Xbox has been about for it's what Xbox has been successful at for 5 years.
It is, so, and they well, that's why Microsoft didn't co-launch the Xbox Slim with Kinect. I mean, they and put it in a bundle because they wanted to get the hardcore gamers like like a big push with just the Slim units because they will buy that, and then they needed something to get everyone else to buy for Christmas.
Yeah,
you know.
I have my doubts that it'll be a long-term Smash success, but they seem to be doing well so far, so we'll wait and see. I still don't have any real interest in purchasing one, so.
You know, I hope it does well enough to the point where maybe we'll get games that I will enjoy on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
Or I hope it crashes and burns and I can get one for $20 in like a year and a half.
So, Neil, there's a new Way Forward game coming to DSiWare.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Some sort of an action puzzle game in which players help a green-skinned alien, you know, just an old-fashioned green-skinned alien, to navigate toward warp portal exits. Is that a canned enough reading for you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
Players avoid hazards, e.g. pink puffballs, electric barriers, and create planets to use as jumping platforms. At the end of each level, players must dodge a laser beam shot from a robotic T-Rex. The dinosaur sinks off-screen amid small explosions when defeated.
They're really getting into the...
amid small explosions.
They're really getting into the details of this game in that write-up there.
Oh, my God.
Describe the explosions.
We should note that this is the ESRB's take on it. You know, like, they're pointing out, like, the violence and, parents need to look at
it. I wonder if it would be worse if it was a real T-Rex as opposed to a robotic T-Rex. That might be...
Probably.
It sounds like it might be a follow-up to Mighty Flip Champs. Like, because, yeah. I mean, just, so, like, well, because, you
yeah,
know,
it's a, you
going
know, it's a get-to-the-end-of-the-screen puzzle game, so...
Yeah. And I'm actually looking up, because I realized that in our show notes, we don't actually say what the game is called.
Is there a name for it? I kind of thought maybe there wasn't a name
for it.
I thought
it didn't have one.
Mighty Flip Champs 2.
It's probably called Avoid
Hazards.
It's like
something Milky Way. Hold on.
T-Rex Milky Way.
Is it called Navigate Toward Warp
Mighty
Portal
Milky
exits?
Way. Yeah, it's totally a sequel
no
of
way.
Mighty Flip Champs.
Oh, okay.
Mighty Milky, yeah. Milky Way. Like, it's totally some kind of follow-up to Mighty Flip Champs. I believe there was a green-skinned alien character or something, maybe. I don't remember exactly. It's been a while since I've played Mighty Flip Champs, but it looks like it's a follow-up to it. I mean, I'm definitely interested. I pretty much dig everything that Way Forward does at this point.
They've done good work.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Speaking of things with the word flip in the title.
Do you want to flip over to Game Talk and Grant talk about
Twisted World?
We had that big old developer diary.
Developer diary, right.
Made this game look interesting.
Well, I think those diaries were interesting because even a mediocre game, I think the development process is fairly interesting to read about. You know, I think it's a lot harder than... after reading that kind of stuff, it's a lot harder than I would have imagined. The game did not turn out great, but there are good things about it. I'm not going to say that it's a complete disaster. The main problem with it is that it's just really buggy. It feels unfinished, which is odd because they spent a long time developing that thing. So I don't know what happened. You can read the review for a detailed look, but basically, if you don't know about this game, you play as a small sorcerer's apprentice character. He's kind of Mario-esque in that he can jump, and it's a 3D platformer, and the worlds that you go through are very colorful, and they're kind of floating in space. The levels are all very like haphazard, scattered platforms, like Super Mario Galaxy. It's pretty obvious that that's the feel they were going for. And it has a interesting, cool mechanic in that the whole premise of the game is that you go through and you have to flip the world around to get through the levels. So all that really amounts to is it makes your character able to walk on walls and ceilings. Because if you rotate the world toward the wall, then your character falls on the wall, so you can walk on it. So that's all it really amounts to. You can walk on walls. There's some good things in here, but they just didn't push the level design hard enough. Most of the levels just consist of you running along, and you hit a bottomless pit, and you flip yourself left or right, so you land on something to your left or right, and then you keep going, and you do it over and over and over. So there's a few things more interesting than that, but not many. And the main problem with it is the enemies they've got scattered throughout the game. I don't know what happened, but the combat is just broken. It's like the collision detection. Like you first of all your attacks are waggle controlled. So that's strike one. You run toward an enemy and you have to swing the remote to hit him, and there's a massive delay. Like worse than, you know, a lot worse than the Zelda delay when you use your sword. So I found it very difficult to hit an enemy without getting hit first, and your life goes pretty quick. I don't know, and there's also a kind of a butt stomp move that you can do, but it seems like the game doesn't know exactly where your enemy is, so you will often miss when you should be hitting him, or vice versa. It's just hard to play. It's just buggy. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. The graphics are pretty nice. That's one of the better parts. They're shiny, and some of the level designs are really nice, and some of the art design is pretty good. The main character is actually really, really cute and animates well, good animations. So that's good, but it's not enough to pull that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of funny about, like, I guess how disappointing that game turned out is on the live show, Craig Harris from formerly of IGN was talking about, you know, the review process and how, like, you know, a Majesco made game is going to have problems because they don't give it a big enough budget, which seemed kind of poignant because I had recently edited your review, Grant, and I was just thinking of that while he said that.
I honestly think that had to be the problem.
I kept on getting delayed, but I remember early, I think it was after our first developer diary, which was back in August, because it was delayed from, I think, May to September, and then it ended up not coming out until October. But someone asked, like, oh, with the delay, did you guys get more time to work on it? And no, they didn't. It was just delayed. Like,
they just sat on it.
I think they ran out. Like, I mean, not necessarily they ran out of money, but like they didn't have the resources and funds to polish that game as much as they wanted to, much as the game needed.
I remember we were all speculating that maybe they would delay it because they wanted to stay away from Super Mario Galaxy 2.
That is 100% the reason.
I don't think that was speculation. I think they said that.
Well, but if you're saying, I mean, maybe that was what they said, and in reality, there were other things going on. I don't know. But
I legitimately got a quote from a PR person saying we delayed it because of Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I forgot if that was.
How far off do you think this was from Epic Mickey? Like, in terms of quality. I don't know. Have you demoed it at all, Neil?
I demoed it at E3 2009, so it's been a long time since I played it, and apparently that was when it was in a really terrible form. But from playing it then, I remember TYP, Lauren, and I were at the Majesco appointment. That's where I first played A Boy and His Blob Wii, which was, like, heavenly. And then we went over to Flip's Twisted World, which I knew a little bit about at the time. I was kind of excited to play it because it seemed interesting, and I despised that demo. Like, nothing worked, and I'm thinking more and more that that's, like, that was near, not the final game, but, like, it didn't get much better than that. And I would say that Epic Mickey's a far better game than this, but, more, I mean, just from my kind of what I've read and what I remember playing is that I feel like Epic Mickey's a better game than this, but not really because...
Oh, okay.
Not saying Epic Mickey's amazing, but saying that this seemed to be really buggy and shitty.
Because
Epic Mickey's not buggy. Oh.
They polished Epic Mickey, at least.
I just thought that Epic Mickey's controls were borked because of the camera issues.
The camera issues are the worst part of the controls. Other than that, I didn't mind the controls.
Oh, okay. I just thought that maybe it would be interesting if, like, the only thing buoying Epic Mickey in a lot of people's minds is the IP. And, like, maybe we'd have a chance to see... you know, like how games do, like similar games without a famous IP would do, but sounds like it's better.
And I think it's also the difference between resources, because Epic Mickey, I mean, just by the fact that it's not buggy, you can tell that resources went into Epic Mickey, quite a bit of resources too, Whereas, I mean, I think Epic Mickey, they may have also ran out of time, because I heard stuff about how that was rushed for holiday 2010, and it was kind of like, this has to come out this year. And I think I've heard speculation that maybe that game wasn't, or at least maybe some of the people on that staff were like, okay, we need more time, but Disney wasn't giving it to them.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Well, anyway, just one more thing about Flips. I wanted to also point out that the music was pretty good. And I remember we, I think, was it RFN, had an interview with Tommy Tallarico?
Yeah, because the music's done by Tommy Tallarico.
Right, and so he, you know, he deserves credit for being one of the high points of the game. There was some really good jazzy stuff in it. A lot of different genres kind of got bounced around. So I like that part of it. So there's a plus, but it's not enough to make you, you know, go buy the game.
It's sad. Right. It's really a bummer. And, I mean, I still think all of the developer diary stuff that we did, I mean, not because I was the person who had to meticulously go through that and make the images work and post it, but I just, that was so fascinating to read. And it's just a bummer that the game sucks.
Yeah.
So let's move on to downloads.
Okay.
After that down note, let's start off with what might very well be one of my favorite WiiWare games ever. Fluidity, which came out a week and a half ago. It's 1,200 points. It's from Nintendo. It's developed by Curve Studios, who the only other game that I know that they are working on, Explodemon, which I think was supposed to be a WiiWare PSN game, but is now a PSN exclusive, which seems to be like a environmental puzzle-based Mega Man or something. I don't know. It's weird. But Fluidity is all about water. And I've been playing this for review. I should be writing that very soon, maybe even right after the show, depending on how awake I am. You control water by tilting the Wii Remote. I know, Grant, in an email, you said something about how it kind of compared to Rolando. I see that, except for
I think it's better than Rolando.
Yeah, it's way better than Rolando.
But it seems similar.
It's similar in concept, though, in that you're tilting left and right to move this water around. But the water moves, you know, I mean, it's water. It's not all together. Yeah. And that presents a challenge, and only in the very early parts of it is it frustrating, and then you very quickly get the gather ability, where you can then get all the water to come near each other at once.
Right.
And
will the gather ability work if some water is like stuck behind an object?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it'll bring it closer, but you might not be able to get it reattached. But usually,
that was the most frustrating part of games like Rolando for me, because you get something stuck behind like a corner or something stupid, and then you have to go rolling, tilting
back.
But
do remember, in this game, it's not like you need to get to the end of the stage with every drop of water with you.
I know, but that's just the kind of OCD person I am.
Well.
And I guess it's not the game's fault.
You have bigger problems than losing water droplets and Fluidity.
If there's like something I leave behind, and I know I could get it, and I know it would give me more points, a lot of times...
Yeah, but you're not going to get points.
Oh, really?
Well, because the way this game works is that there's four different chapters.
You may have just sold me on this game.
Okay, so I guess thank you for illuminating that I need to describe how it works. So you have four different chapters. Like, the whole conceit of the game is that it's like this, like, aqua, like the Aquaticus, which is like this water encyclopedia or something. And there's four different chapters that have, like, different comic panels. And in each chapter, you know, you start off in the same area and you basically explore these comic panels, which there's three pages in each chapter with probably, like five or six panels in each one of varying size. They're all bigger than one screen. And you can just hit the A button and look around in the room if you want to. But you're going to find these rainbow drops, which are basically like stars in, you know, Super Mario 64. Except for this, it's not like you're going in there with the intent of getting one specifically. It's like you wander around on the map. You can see in what panels you still have rainbow drops to get, which is really nice, because then you're kind of like, I don't know exactly how to get one there, but I know I have to get one there. How do I do it? But you get the rainbow drops in a variety of different ways. Like, you'll have to, like, use the water to, like, hit switches, or, like, collect goldfish and put them in a ball, or collect cogs and make gears work, collect different color droplets that are hidden throughout it in creative ways, manipulate the water in interesting ways by using your different abilities, of which there are 10, and you also can change forms later in the game. The first one you get is you can turn into an ice cube, which presents a whole other thing. And then there's also like platforming, and you have platforming with, you know, water, or you have platforming with the ice cube, which is at first really, really frustrating. And then you get an ability where the ice cube, like, you know, will stick to walls for a little bit. And that's a lot of what this game does, is that you'll get, you know, you'll start off with the water and it'll be a little frustrating, and they give you an ability shortly after that that makes it not frustrating, just like the ice cube, and then you have to, you know, do some platforming with it, and that's a pain in the ass. And then you get an ability that makes it a little easier. And the last form that you have is a cloud, which is, you know, like water vapor. And with a cloud, you can basically just float around, which at that point in the game, it completely opens everything up, which is really, really cool. Because where before, you know, you were kind of limited because you're an ice cube or water, this time you can kind of just, you know, just fly throughout every part of the level. I mean, you might not be able to do everything because, you know, you're just a cloud. But even with that, then you have the ability to, at first with the cloud, you're powerless. And then eventually you get an ability to shoot lightning bolts, which is then very, very, you know, after dodging the enemies in the game, which are like, you know, black goop. I think they're actually, all the enemies are called goop. When you're the cloud, you need to avoid them like the plague, or else you're going to die. And then you get this lightning bolt ability, and you can just kick the shit out of them, which is so rewarding. And that's a lot of what this game does, is just, it's rewarding. It's, you know, you'll be like, oh, that was clever, I just solved this puzzle. And there's fucking 80 rainbow drops in it. And I mean, that makes the $12 price, which to me seemed high, like, it's totally worth it. Like, I've probably already put in easily 5+ hours into it, and I've got 40 raindrops.
So you measure a game's value by the amount of rainbow drops that are contained.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess, okay, I'll do that.
Jeez, Resident Evil 4 sucks then.
Yeah,
there's
no
rainbow drops in that.
There's so many, like, every other game sucks except for Fluidity now. But I mean, like, there's just a lot of content. It's basically like you've got 80 stars and like 80 stars in a Super Mario game, and it's $12.
Are there any rainbow? Or are there any levels with double rainbow drops?
Sadly, no. That's for Fluidity 2.
This is kind of random, but if I've seemed kind of distant for the past like 30 minutes, it's because my window faces the street, and for a long time now, my neighbor has been trying to chase a coyote out of their lawn. And it's hilarious. I realized during the Flip Twisted World thing, my question was kind of random, but it was very entertaining. So, minor explanation, I guess.
Don't let it get in your house.
It's like in my yard / his yard. Right. And my dog has a little cage, so when she goes outside, I don't have to worry about coyotes. But it's been here like for a whole week too. Like, I see it in the bushes all the time. And,
does it carry boxes that say Acme on the side?
No, I did see it being chased by a roadrunner.
Okay.
Or chasing a roadrunner, excuse me.
Yeah.
And then he tried to kill it.
No, but
did he run off a cliff?
Like, and setting off dynamite?
It never works, ever. They just get all these scratches and they're gone in the next scene.
Yep.
But yeah, I went out to get like an orange from my neighbor's tree, which, sorry neighbor, but they don't listen to this, the other night. And yeah, I was in the bushes and it scared the shit out of me. I think it's the same one.
Fantastic.
I'm sorry, Andy. You edit this.
You're going to get
I'm
a
so
really
sorry.
Pissed off listener mail from your neighbor. Like, I know what you
from
did,
my neighbor.
You asshole.
Yeah, you know he listens to every episode.
My oranges! Yeah.
But yeah, right. Fluidity is a hell of a game. If I had any complaint, it's that sometimes the motion controls are difficult, but I'm just like, that's kind of how motion controls are sometimes.
Don't forget to mention that it has a demo, so, you know.
Yeah, there's a demo. It's
get
free.
That thing.
Yeah,
it costs you 0
right
points to
the,
get.
Yes, I have the demo. It's really good. I'm almost certainly going to buy it.
I heard the word Rolando, and I kind of tuned out. But,
well,
you know,
it's just a very, very basic mechanic is similar.
Yeah.
I think
the
level design, for just from the little I played, the level design seems a lot better and it's just more interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I mean
I hate to
just label like every game like this, but it's kind of Metroidvania-esque in how like the world, you know, you get new powers and it opens up different parts of it, and it's not necessarily like linear, like you can pretty much do whatever the hell you want. I mean, with the limits of what your powers can get you. But and then you go back to the levels with your powers, and you'll have that moment where, like, oh, I can interact with those in that way. Oh shit, I can go back to the other two chapters and get all these rainbow drops.
Sounds good.
Rainbow drops.
There's also puzzle pieces you can get too that unlock like little like playrooms. I only have one of them unlocked right now where it's just like I have to go get fish around the level and put them into a fishbowl. It was kind of fun.
So I guess speaking of iPhone games or comparisons to them, the next WiiWare game is Lilthline, which is actually a game by Gaijin Games, right?
Yeah, I don't think they developed it. It's the first one they're publishing.
Okay, yeah, because it came out on the iPhone earlier this year.
Yeah.
And
I think what Gaijin Games is, they may have, like, developed it for Wii, but they did not develop the game. They're publishing it more.
Okay. Well, the style is kind of reminiscent of a Gaijin game. Anyway,
oh, yeah,
so
definitely.
I can see where they, you know, why they picked it up, and it was pretty well received when it first came out. I don't know how it translated to WiiWare, though.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked it out yet. It just came out this week. There's a demo out for that, too, which I plan on checking out.
Dang.
As soon as I play Fluidity and then check out the Jet Rocket demo that I downloaded 2 weeks ago.
Now, do we know if these demos are limited time still, or what's going on with that?
It depends on what ranking they get. I know a bunch of developers have kind of hinted at it.
Really?
I know Gaijin Games is actually one of them, that if they get, like, a bronze, like, I forget, it's higher than some sort of rating, because after you're done the demo, you can rate it. If it's higher than that, then it'll stay up, but if it's not, it'll disappear in 4 weeks.
That is such a weird way to do stuff.
I know.
It wouldn't be that weird if they would just always have demos of the top four games or something like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
why do they have to turn into, like, freaking Club Nintendo?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't get my platinum ranking, so goodbye, demo. Now no one's going to be able to try my game. Yeah, and, you know, like, what if people are asses? People do that all the time to, like, games on Amazon, you know, and downrank them because of, like, oh, they didn't patch in WSD controls or something, you know? That's annoying. I'm sorry.
But Lilthline is 500 points. It's a music game. So how exactly did it play on the iPhone, Nate? Did you play it?
I don't remember. I did play it, and I think it was something like music-y, but I don't even remember.
Yeah.
At this point. There are so many
I'm sorry, everyone.
Games.
We should have looked this game up.
No. I could go back and play it. I mean, I still have it. I don't know.
I know. It's like a rhythm game, but
yeah,
I feel like we're
so many iPhone
games. So let's just move on.
Let's
move on to Fire Placing.
I got the demo for this.
There is no demo for this.
You place a fire?
What it is that you spend $5.
You are an arsonist.
Or 500 points.
You go about placing
and then,
fires.
You can then put a fireplace, like a fake fireplace on your TV, and you can like have it on during dinner.
I've heard about this. I've heard it's awful.
That cannot be true.
Yeah, it's from like Comer
Entertainment,
Grant, or something.
They were talking about this on the Joystick podcast last week, actually.
Yeah.
Apparently, not only is it that. It's a really, really bad version of that.
How do you mess that up? How do you receive?
You can, I believe you can get.
It's
a better
like the
version
fire
on
the is like
Xbox
drawn
Live
on.
Indie channel.
Yeah, it's like a hand drawn. It's like a poorly hand drawn fire. Not even like a digitized fire or like.
Man, you know,
fire.
I really hope they release a flashlight app for WiiWare.
So oh, I can, God, that would be fantastic.
So I can carry my.
Do you
TV
know what?
Around.
I would actually. I would buy one of these if it was like a Christmas fireplace or something, and it was a video, and it had like Wilford Brimley in a rocking chair. And, like, every once in a while, he would say something about diabetes.
Yes, I would buy that.
I would buy that, actually, for $2 or something. That would probably be the limit.
That's sad.
Anyways.
What's this DSiWare game?
Little Red Riding Hood's Zombie BBQ.
Zombie Barbecue?
Yes, it's 800 points. It's actually a re-release of a retail game that came out. It's like a... Now, from watching videos, I've always been kind of interested in this because the concept seems ridiculous, and I was watching videos again. It looks kind of like, I mean, not like it's like Sin and Punishment-esque, but it's like 2D Sin and Punishment kind of, where you have a character on the bottom screen, and you move them from left and right, or like from left to right, and you're shooting enemies that are also coming down on the bottom screen, but they're on the top screen.
That just sounds like shoot 'em up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, I guess it's the fact that you're controlling a character and not like a ship. Why it reminded me of the 2D Sin and Punishment.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
Yeah. Sorry, can I just say enough with the zombie games? I love zombies, but
I agree.
I don't know what happened.
I complained about that a lot, and then I got sucked way into Left 4 Dead 2. And I,
well, you know, Left 4 Dead 2 came out back, you know, I mean, I'm talking about...
Oh, I just played it recently.
I'm talking about just in the last 6 months. Like,
also, Valve can do whatever the fuck they want. They're Valve.
Sure, that's... that they have it.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, if they and, you know, Resident Evil series kept going, I would be okay. But you I don't know. And Plants vs. Zombies is good. I think Plants vs. Zombies kicked off a whole, like, mobile zombie game revolution that's gotten out of hand. I don't know.
Oh, definitely.
And also, no, mobile PopCap games could do whatever the fuck they want, too.
Sure.
Zuma Blitz, man.
You know
what?
I don't... The only PopCap game I've ever enjoyed is Plants vs. Zombies.
I love Peggle.
I love Zuma.
I'm a big fan of Bookworm, but
Bookworm's great too. I have the DSiWare version of that.
I don't think there's any better games to just kill time without thinking at all than PopCap games, except for Plants vs. Zombies is actually kind of difficult toward the end. But yeah,
yeah, I think that's why I liked Plants vs. Zombies
a little bit
more. You kind of
difficult, yeah.
A little more heady, but definitely, you know, it's still a pretty easy game.
All right,
sure.
So.
We have three virtual console games. Right?
Yeah, there was a week where we had two. They were two virtual console arcade games. We got Wolf
and guess how many of them are Neo Geo games?
Actually,
none of them.
Yeah, we got two came out 2 Mondays ago. Wolf of the Battlefield Commando and Sun, which are both Capcom arcade games. I played some of Sun at New York Comic Con when all these Capcom VC arcade games were announced. And it was kind of like a fun little game where you played as this monkey and you would jump from these different platforms that would go from left to right and enemies would be there. I mean, it's an arcade game, definitely. I don't think I'd pay $8 for it, but it seemed fun. And Wolf of the Battlefield Commando is, you know, a shooter. Like,
I played the NES version of that. I don't remember the arcade.
Yeah.
By shooter, do you mean like a side-scrolling shooter or a...
It's like Ikari Warriors. You remember that?
It's actually very similar to Ikari Warriors, I believe.
Yeah, it's overhead...
Vertical scrolling?
No, not scrolling. It's trying to think of a popular example besides these two games, exactly.
So am I.
A Smash TV, kind of, but minus the dual stick and outside.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. All right.
Hmm. And then Darius Twin came out from Taito on the Super Nintendo.
That is a shmup?
I believe so.
Okay. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. If you know anything about Darius Twin, if I'm even saying it right, it might be Darius Twin.
Darius.
I think I'm saying it. Darius Twin.
That's right.
If anyone has any fond memories of Darius Twin or any of the virtual console games that were released this week for that matter, please do write in because, I mean, sometimes we've played these games, but at this point when it's kind of like the cream of the crap on virtual console, we haven't. So, if you have any thoughts on them, write in. And now, speaking of that, let's get to our listener mail.
First one from Controller Flex. I will read it, I guess.
Yeah, go for it.
Titled, Sup, Fellas. For suggestions on the not-so-quite-new-but-added direction that you are all planning for the new year, most of us love the unintentional bullshit that happens between the planned events. That's what keeps us coming back. The obvious dick jokes from Zach and many more of your antics are appreciated. I'm not sure if this is left up to RFN, if they want to touch on them, but covering the Iwata asks would be cool, and I would love to hear y'all make fun of the content on the Nintendo channel. The two topics can be covered in a section you called Nintendo BSI. not sure about that. He said it stands for bullshit information, but you knew that. Either way, love the programming you put on, as well as your reviews and the stories behind them. From Neil.
No,
it's because
that's from Controller Flex.
Oh, is that for Neil to write? Oh, God.
Neil to read.
Yeah, that wasn't that. I didn't quite do that right on in the show notes.
No,
that was okay. That was from Controller Flex, who has written into our podcast here at NWR a few.
So
different
that
times,
wasn't
but,
Neil's alt account. I did say Controller Flex.
Well,
that's
Sergeant Foster.
That was just my mind not working.
Yeah, Sergeant Foster.
He's our friend over. Where is he? Is he in Japan? I think he is.
Yeah,
Okinawa.
I think so.
Yeah. As far as the Iwata asks, I think that would be kind of fun to cover at some point. I believe we have in the past when it's newsworthy, but there's so many of them that come out that usually it's tough to keep up with all of them. Yeah. And I mean, Iwata's just laughing all the damn time.
Yeah.
But I do think that making fun of Nintendo channel content is that is some prime territory for.
Yeah, I have fallen off the horse with watching Nintendo Week. Ever since I was on a Nintendo Week, I've shied away from it because I was so fucking embarrassed by me being on Nintendo Week.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it was like the kind of thing where like they were interviewing me. I'm like, the stupidest thing that I do, that's what's going to go on the fucking video. And like they were like, do you want to sing a song about it? And I was like, okay, I'll sing a song. And I was just like, you idiot. Why did you do that? Wait,
I didn't know about this at all, Neil.
Yeah, it's back when I was in the Photo Dojo tournament.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I run into fucking Gary and Allison at like every New York event. And it's always, there was one time where Gary just like fucking bailed down the stairs at Nintendo World Store. Like,
you didn't get that on video.
No, it was the new Super Mario Brothers Wii launch where it was like pouring rain and they had this whole like outdoor thing planned in Rockefeller Center. So it was just a total disaster. But like, I remember I was walking upstairs at Nintendo World Store. And this dude just walks past me and just fucking eats it. Like, falls halfway, like probably like 5 or 6 stairs, just falls right down. And like me poor and like guy. I think I was there with another person. It may have even been Jared, I'm not sure. But I just remember like me and a couple people around us were just like, holy shit, are you okay, dude? And then like we help him up and everything. And then like he's just like, yeah, I'm fine. And like just walks away. And then like, whoever, like, someone
well,
that I'm hearing,
like, does all his own stunts for Nintendo.
Apparently.
Week,
so. And then, like, we just kind of look at each other and we're like, I think that's the dude from Nintendo Week.
Yeah, Neil, you know you're never going to get invited back to Nintendo Week now.
Yeah, probably
I hope
not.
You realize. So,
you know they listen to these, too.
So. Yeah, they do. You're burning bridges likely. Right now.
That's well, you know what? Bill Trennan, bring it on. Photo Dojo, me and you. Let's go. We never fought at E3. Let's do it. I'm calling you out, Trennan. Okay. He's never going to hear this.
Yeah.
But.
So, Andy, you want to grab the next one?
Yeah, sure. James, not James Jones, but a different James entirely. James writes in, hey, love the show. It's Kisaki Project from the forums.
So that's
okay,
James' alt account?
It's yeah. Definitely not James because it starts with, hey, love the show.
Yeah,
so maybe it's James' alter ego, but yeah.
Anyways, but just an aside before we go this, I'm going to have to hunt down a YouTube link to the week that I was on, the episode of Nintendo Week I'm on, and maybe we'll put it up with the show when the show goes up or something.
Dude, yeah, I'd love to hear your song.
Yeah, and then like, and then it's like they cut me all weirdly, where it's like they basically do a jump cut, and it just makes me sound like a fucking retard.
Fantastic.
Well, it's not hard to do with you.
Where it's just like, it's just like, how did you win? And it just cuts to me, like I said like a sentence before this, and it just like cuts to me just saying, like, use fireballs.
Oh, God.
Fucking Nintendo Week.
Anyway, James writes in, hey, love the show. It's Kisaki Project from the forums. Anyway, if you guys love to bitch about the downloads, so I wanted to complain about them as well. What is up with the terrible Neo Geo selection on Virtual Console? The system has so many expensive rare games that can be sold on VC that aren't. I wish they would push the VC more, but hilariously enough, there are more Neo Geo games than N64 games. That's fairly comical if you think about the market presence of those systems. Also, PlayStation Store has an import section, and from what I've heard from Victor Ireland, that this is actually selling pretty decently. Nintendo, if they had any common sense, would add tons more imports of that stuff to VC, but they won't.
Hmm. I'm sorry.
I would say that Nintendo has never really done much to show they're willing to be risky with Virtual Console with stuff like import games, aside from like a couple of small occasions.
They did their import things, Sin and Punishment, and the original
Lost
version
Levels.
Of Lost Levels. And like, there's been some other import games here or there. Like, I think there's that Mylon Secret Castle sequel or something. And like, there's a few others. Like, well, isn't Chouinki an import title? I think it is.
Yeah, it might be.
Like, I mean, there's been import titles here or there, but there's, like, so many that just miss the boat. But then again, he brings up PSN, and there's about, like, 20, like, PlayStation 1 RPGs. Like, I think Chrono Cross just came out over in Japan, and, like, North America ain't getting shit from that. And it's like basically a who's who of like PS1 RPGs that are not coming out in North America but are out in Japan.
And you
think
know
Europe
what?
Too.
We're not even getting the non-import games that I want on PSN.
Yeah.
For you know, I want Vagrant Story. What the hell?
Yeah.
That's something I
well,
haven't
no, it's
been
not
able
even
play.
Import games, but just games in general. Like, Vagrant Story was...
That's what I meant by mentioning Vagrant Story. Like, we're not even getting all the things we want. And, like, even for Virtual Console, like, where's Pilot Wing 64? Like, before you start worrying about all the import titles we could get, like, hey, let's get all the stuff that did come out. That we
how about some Contra Hardcore action?
I've never played Contra Hardcore before, but I got it off of GooseX because of what Nathan Fouts said about it on RFN. It's still sitting there. I haven't busted out my Genesis yet. I really want to play it, though.
Also, Castlevania Bloodlines is on Virtual Console, is it?
I don't know.
I don't believe
you know
it
there,
is.
There are also a lot of Final Fantasy titles, Dragon Quest titles. Actually... they'd have to import, you know, like Dragon Quest 3 and stuff.
Yeah,
but
I think putting up Dragon Quest 1 would be cool as shit. I mean, from a historical standpoint.
Have they done
that?
Have they? No, they've only put up Final Fantasy 1, huh?
Yeah, Final Fantasy
yeah,
1
Dragon,
and then
Dragon Warrior
2
1 and
2. 4,
you know?
And then Mystic Quest. I guess Square Enix is still releasing stuff on Virtual Console, though, so...
I mean,
Taito, Darius Twin. Taito's owned by Square Enix, so...
Yeah. I mean, I know we're not going to see stuff like Chrono Trigger because of the remakes, but you know, I would have said that for Final Fantasy 1 and 2. So, you never know. It just seems like there's not too much motivation. And I don't know if it's sales, but I can't imagine the investment's that big to you know, get something on there, you know, that's going to run on the system anyways and then sit on a server somewhere.
Yeah. I do find it ironic that the episode that we read this and he complains about Neo Geo games, there are three virtual console games and no
Neo
Geo games.
He's not complaining about the amount of Neo Geo games. He's complaining that we have so many and that he's not getting the ones he wants.
Yeah, we have more Neo Geo games than N64 games now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not really familiar with the Neo Geo, so I don't know what big titles are missing. Like, I know they got a lot of arcade games.
It's like
games,
shit with
you know,
huge sprites, right?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a lot of, like, Neo Geo RPGs or anything, but I know there's at least a couple more really good King of Fighters games they could be putting out. And probably a couple more Metal Slugs they could be... I mean, they have these things... Some of these things are in collections. Why not put them on Virtual Console? I'd rather get it digitally so it's on the system rather than swap discs to play it off a collection.
I mean, that's why I've even been thinking about Super Mario All-Stars, which, well, not doing new releases, but, hey, guys, it's out. It's $30. And, like, I don't want to get a fucking disc of Super Mario All-Stars. If they threw that up in Virtual Console, even if they charged a little bit of a premium for it, I'd probably get it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it is, you know, a great value. So if they wanted to charge more, I would really, I'd understand it.
Yeah.
You know, and plus they offer the games individually, but, you know, without the added stuff.
What if they,
Savability and the spruced up graphics.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be something else if they sold some DLC for, the original NES versions of those games to give you the better graphics. A 200-point pack. Wouldn't that be something else?
Man, you were a dream.
You'll never see that, but man.
You're living in
it'll
fantasy
never happen, but yeah. Hey, you know what? That's a good idea.
Sure.
I mean, I kind of want to get Mario All-Stars, but I have no real reason to want it because I already have all of those games on Virtual Console.
If I was rich... like stupid rich, I would totally get it, but I need to be a little fiscally responsible.
Well, yeah, you know, as much as I love Nintendo, the way they nickel and dime us off of our nostalgia is shameless.
It really is.
But that's a lot of companies too.
I mean, yeah,
that's great.
Look
and
at the Sly collection.
Yeah,
or even God of War collection.
I don't blame them at all. I mean,
The problem is the necessity for those PS2 collections arose from Sony's own, you know, screwing of their
backwards things like the Sly collection doesn't really bother me that much because there's a legitimate interest in having some of those games on the PS3 on one disc.
And I personally enjoy it because I never really played the Sly Cooper games. I only played the original God of War, so I have God of War collection. I intend to get Sly collection one of these days. I like those a lot.
I've been looking at Sly collection as well. I went to the store with the full intent of getting it a while back, but I ended up getting the first Uncharted instead. But, yeah, you know, I think those games have added value. The HD graphics and, I guess, 3D for some crazies. But
putting them all on one disc is added value as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Hey, I have an off topic. I have an off topic sort of question. Does anybody
on
have
newscast?
No. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll stop. No, do any of you have, this is sort of, you know, in the same vein. Do you any of you have the Metal Slug collection?
No.
No, I don't.
I was kind of thinking about going for that, but I was just wondering if you guys had it. So I don't know. I'll read up
on
it.
I don't have it. To me, the Metal Slug games are all kind of pretty
the same.
Similar.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm fine with that if it's just like basically, if I like the gameplay, then 10 versions of that is you know, cool by
yeah.
me.
Yeah, sure. They're all pretty good. I mean,
if you can find a good price for it, I can't really see it being a bad deal. I don't remember hearing terrible things about the port. I remember wanting to get it around when the Wii first came out.
Yeah, I'll probably look for it.
So that probably wraps up what James had to ask. So we want to see some of the Metal Slug games and King of Fighters on it. But
how about some more N64 games? I mean,
yeah, like my main concern is like, hey, let's get the Nintendo stuff that we still haven't gotten on there.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Same enough for 3DS.
How about some Gauntlet
oh
Legends
my God.
On
don't,
N64?
Don't, I mean, you know,
any third parties on N64 would be nice, please. Any, really.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
A single
yeah.
one of them would be fantastic. Gauntlet
Didn't
Legends, I play
one?
That.
Hey, let's get like Mario Party 2 up in there.
Yeah, well, oh, that's yeah. coming out in Japan on Christmas Eve.
Oh, really? It's not here, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Europe and Christmas, I don't know.
You know what?
One of those
they
places.
If they put out Castlevania 64, I'd buy that, because I played it on the cartridge.
I remember that game. I had a good time with it.
It's widely hated, but I enjoyed it. I played again.
I was young, so that's probably why I enjoyed it, because I was stupid. But
well, let's go ahead and take a little break, and we'll come back with our part one of our feature discussion. Okay.
And we are back from our lengthy hiatus. It probably sounded like just a few seconds to you, but we're here to talk about our games of the year.
It's been 4 years, so we're talking about the games of the year 2014. That was such a long break.
Games of the 4 years. Oh, I see what you were doing.
And we came back to tell you in 2010.
Yeah.
I guess, speaking of time travel, do you want to just start off with Grant's number three game?
Well, oh, my goodness. Best segue ever.
Let's explain the
format. God, Andy, but I know. I was going to explain, but there was a segue.
I'm sorry. I ruined your segue. I ruined all of the fun.
Gergen is dead.
Go back to being dead.
Okay, well, in an alternate present in which we've explained the... never mind. Andy, just go.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm explaining it?
Yes.
All right. So here's the deal. We could do this a couple of different ways, and we thought about it. You could do your favorite DS games or your favorite Wii games, but that's a pain in the ass, because to be perfectly honest, most of us haven't played a ton of Wii and DS games, like enough to like make two separate lists. We figured we'd keep the number low, and we combine the system pools into one, and basically say, okay, any platform is good. Wii, DS, WiiWare, DSiWare, give me your top three games. So we're going to read them off, 3, 2, 1. We're all going to give our three pick, our two pick, our one pick. Except for Neil, actually, because Neil's going to save his picks for part two, in which Zach will return, and we'll be joined by Carl Castaneda.
Yeah, so we'll have three people going this week, and then in 2 weeks, for our last episode of this year, we will have three more people talking about their three favorite games of the year, although you might be able to guess what some of mine are, because there's a little overlap here.
Yeah, Flips Twisted World.
Yeah.
Flips Twisted World, Epic Mechie.
And then I will say, stay tuned for after the closing credits, because we're going to do a little bit of post-game content.
Yeah,
for,
we're going to talk
some
about
non-Nintendo favorites.
Yeah, our favorite,
our
non-Nintendo
real
game.
Favorites.
Yeah.
Our favorite actual games, not bullshit kitty games.
Well, so, mine's still a bullshit kitty game, but yeah.
Let's kick this off.
Yeah.
Okay, back
now
to...
now we can use a segue.
Now time travel. back to the beginning of this segment.
It's about time we kicked this off.
Remember when we were talking about time travel earlier.
Andy,
well,
you've unwound another segue.
You unwound my future. Professor Layton.
So if you didn't guess, my three is Professor Layton in the Unwound Future. I think that is the third Professor Layton game.
Yes.
And it is, you know, I've only played the first one and the third one. And yes, it is very good. It is Professor Layton, but that is a very good thing because, I don't know, if you've played Professor Layton before, you know what to expect. But basically, it's a very, very well-animated, cute cartoon adventure game in which you are... in control of Professor Layton, who's this British guy, and Luke, who's this British kid, and you run around this British place and speak to British people. But in between all of the British things, you solve puzzles. And the puzzles are basically the kind of things you... they're logic puzzles that are fairly, you know, self-contained little things, that the kind of things you get in, you know...
It feels like you're practicing for the SAT or something.
That's right. You know, you get them in puzzle books or things like that. But that's the kind. They're logic puzzles that and brain teasers and that sort of thing. But you know, I played that. I owned a whole bunch of puzzle books like that when I was a kid, and I ate that stuff up, and I loved it. And
same here.
So,
oh yeah.
So this,
same.
Yeah. So I mean, that's kind of what you know. That was almost like. One of my favorite things to do when I wasn't in school, which is kind of weird because it's sort of like being in school.
I know, and actually, I don't know if you guys have this too, but I had an adult friend that would, you know, dress up in, you know, like a coat and a top hat and have me call him professor.
Yeah, and then you ran around.
It was really eerie.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to, you know, get into that now. That sounds deep, but...
Just watch the
Dateline. Okay, it's on the next episode.
To Catch a Predator.
Yeah, well, so the puzzles are really good. They're really just brain teasery type stuff, and you, you know, but the container that all those puzzles are wrapped in is really nice. It's got kind of a, you know, for these Professor Layton games, the stories are generally really really wacky, and they have kind of a crazy twist.
Yeah,
and,
but they're so damn
interesting.
Well,
and you could almost see the charm oozing out of the DS. Like, the whole thing is...
They're very well written. They're very like, well presented.
Yeah,
and,
like, the plot's absurd, but it works so well.
Yeah, and, you know, you just go along for the ride. And the plot twist in this one was just, like, crazy ridiculous, but it was really fun.
So, Grant, how is it different from... I know James has already discussed on One Future on RFN. But, you know, like, how did you find it different or maybe more appealing than the other two Layton games?
You know, well, I've only played the first one besides this.
Okay.
But I, you know, it seems like the puzzles – James already mentioned it, so I'm going to basically repeat what he said. But it seems like the puzzles are less –
bullshit?
They're kind of less, like, mind games. That's not the right word. They're kind of less –
cheap.
They're less about tricking you, and they're more about actually solving a puzzle.
Yeah.
Right, the ones that are more... Yeah, exactly. And James gave a good example of it the last time he talked about it, where basically, you know, the correct answer is actually one of the ones that is not presented to you as a choice, and so you kind of... You know,
it's like an entire test where all the answers are none of the above.
Yeah, sure.
And
you're just freaking out. And that happens in this game, but it's not very often. So, you know, and the one or two times it did happen, I got it actually pretty quick, so it wasn't a big deal. And actually, I should say that one of my favorite things about this that's different is, I don't know if you remember the little mini games that you kind of collect along the way.
Oh, they're so awesome.
That are optional. Yeah, the ones in this game are really good. There's one where you get these tracks and you have to set up these arrows and things on the track and run a toy car through it and get to the exit.
Yep.
And they're really hard and they're really good. And there's another one where you have a parrot and you have to bounce him off these platforms to the end of a level and you have
Which
to place...
Which are really... Some of the later ones are really devilish.
I know. I'm stuck on a bunch of them, actually.
Diabolical, almost.
Diabolical, and they're in a box, sort of.
I really didn't like the hamster minigame from Diabolical Box.
I thought I thought the voice for the hamster was just so ridiculous that it made me laugh.
I usually play Professor Layton with the podcast, so I'm not sure about that. But
I was doing the review for it, so I made sure I listened to the sound, and that was just like, "What are you saying, hamster?"
Oh, and Neil, are there any other minigames that I'm forgetting? Because it seems like there might be one other one.
There's a third one, but I forget what it is. It's been a while since I played the game.
But they're good. Very good. I think they're better than the ones in the first game.
I got to say about the Professor Layton games is that I know some people bag on them for, especially like because this is a, these three games are a trilogy, and about how like they're not really that different. But to me, each game, like from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3, like the improvement isn't so much that like the game's drastically changed. It's the same style of game, but it's just bigger, better, and better. Like, I made the comment in my review of the second game where it felt like a really well done movie sequel, and the third one does the same thing where it's like, you know, it's familiar characters. They're put in a new environment. They're kind of like it's like really, really well done movie sequels.
Sure.
Where, of course, you know, it's not going to be a completely different game, but it's just everything is so much more refined this time, and everything's presented so much better. Like, the integration between the puzzles and the story in the third game is light years beyond what it was in the first game.
Yeah.
And even the story in general is way better than the first game story. And, like, just to give you a hint of the ridiculous shit that happens in this game, this is a little spoilerish, so just skip ahead, like, 20 seconds if you're worried. You turn a slot machine. You have a shootout at a casino. There is a flying fortress over London at the end of the game. And I think like it's fucking ridiculous. And like Professor Layton like flies a car onto this fortress. It's amazing.
Well, you didn't mention the awesome thing about the casino part is that he takes these guys are shooting at him and a slot machine breaks and he takes the parts of the slot machine and he turns them into a machine gun.
It's so
awesome. the process of doing that
is
actually
one of the...
Wait,
are you kidding?
No,
this happens in the game. It's amazing.
Oh my god.
and the process of turning it into a machine gun is actually one of the puzzles, and then it shoots quarters at the bad guys. It's very funny.
And they all just run away. And like you motherfuckers have bullets. Why don't you just shoot them?
Yeah,
like it's he's hitting me with coins.
A quarter moving quickly enough can kill.
Yes,
that's true. And I don't the story. Like you said, the story. You know, while it is ridiculous, it is very cool, and actually I did not see that twist coming at all at the end of it. Like, it really got me.
Yeah, like there's a gigantic twist at the end that is, in all honesty, it's a tearjerker. Like, it's just...
The very, very end is really good. Yeah.
Holy shit, like...
Yeah.
It both flipped and twisted your world.
It did. Like, it really did.
I kind of stopped playing the second game pretty quick into it. Like, I had the second game. I don't think I put more than an hour into it, but now you're making me kind of want to play through it so I can get to the third one.
Dude, in all honesty, not saying that the second one is bad, but you own the second game, so I just say play through it. But if you're in a position where it's like you played the first one, you enjoyed it, and you want to play the second one or the third one, I mean, not that you necessarily want to go backwards later, but if you wanted to just pick one of them, go with the third one because I think it's the best in the series so far.
Yeah.
And especially the story in the third one, like you go into Professor Layton's history, you find out why he has the hat.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like really like just the emotional payoff at the end of that game.
All of the burning questions.
Yes, as stupid as the story gets at times, the emotional payoff at the end of that game is really incredible.
Neil, is it because he has a third eye?
Yeah, actually. He's weird. And he's got horns sticking out of his head.
It's all nanobots.
Yep.
Anything else to say about Professor Layton, Grant?
Quickly, just wanted to mention that the other thing that, you know, half of the charm of the game is the animation style. I think this has some of the best animation of any game I've ever played. Just the kind of British animation style.
Kind of like Triplets of Bellevue.
Exactly. Whatever that's called. That kind of European animation is something you don't see in games. It's drowned out by, you know, anime and everything, which I'm not so into. So it's really nice to see that. So I really like that.
Awesome. All right. Let's move on to Andy's number three game, which is...
Number three game for me is Picross 3D, which came out, I don't remember when, it was early summer, I'm thinking, yeah. Of course, this is the 3D block-breaking, shape-building, time-suck that you put into your DS, and then it's 12 hours later.
Oh, my God. It's
yeah,
so
I love this game. I love this one, too.
It is.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it is quite simply just one of the most absorbing puzzle games I've ever played. Like like I said, you put the thing in your DS and you just can't put it down. I think that was actually the abstract for the review that I wrote, which was you're never going to put your DS down again.
Now, Andy, I only played the demo. Do you think that the demo did it justice? I don't know if you played the demo.
I don't remember if I played. I would assume the demo was probably just a tutorial, right?
I haven't played the full game, so it was a tutorial. I don't know if it was the game's tutorial.
The tutorial in the game is really long but necessary.
Yeah, I would say that you have to play through a good... I mean, especially if you're entirely new to Picross, because the 2D version of the game that came out a few years earlier, the logic is largely the same. But
I'm just wondering if it gets more complex. Like, will I actually get to sit and think, or is it like,
You will. You will absolutely come across puzzles, especially towards the middle of the medium section. And that's one of the problems with the game, is the game makes you do a good, like, 50 puzzles that are fairly brainless before you get to the ones that'll make you think. So the game basically makes you, muscle memory is the way to put it. The game makes you commit a lot of it to muscle memory before it really starts serving you some puzzles that'll stump you for a while. And, of course, the hard part isn't necessarily solving a puzzle. The hard part is getting a 3-star on a puzzle, because you get 1-star for finishing it, and you get 1-star for finishing it within a specific time period, and you get a 3rd star for finishing it with no mistakes. So to finish the puzzle quickly without making a single mistake is a whole other ballpark entirely.
Well, that sounds like you're just memorizing a puzzle. You're not solving a puzzle, right?
Oh, no, there's no memory. And once you get to these puzzles that are like, you know, 8 blocks by 6 blocks by 10 blocks, you're talking hundreds upon hundreds of blocks. You can memorize the first few steps, but you're not going to memorize the entire thing.
What's the ceiling on the steps? Is it like 150 steps or something?
10 by 10 by 10, so 1,000, I guess,
so that
blocks.
1,000 steps? Wow.
Yeah. Well, 1,000 blocks, so yeah, I guess. However many blocks need to be knocked out.
That's still pretty big.
Yeah.
If you think about 2D Picross, this is basically a whole bunch of 2D Picross puzzles wrapped up in every single one of them. Like, you know, if you have like a 4x4x4, that's actually 4 2D Picross puzzles. But of course, it's a little easier than that, because there are extra clues that come with that too.
Yep.
Clues on the depth. But I would say, like, I think I never made it out of the meeting. I know a lot of people solved the entire thing. I know, Grant, you solved
it. I think I solved all of it, or maybe I missed one
or
two.
And my wife actually solved every puzzle.
Yeah, Lauren and I fought over Picross 3D for a very long time, in which, like it was around finals, too. So it would be basically, like, one person's like, oh, I'm going to go work on this paper, and the other person would be like, good, and grab the DS and, like, make sure, like, that. Like, there was, like, one time where, like, I had it, because we both have DSs, and I had the game in my system and, like, went back to my dorm and then realized that she took the game out of the system. And I was just like, what the hell? What's wrong with you? Because, like, we just got to the point where we were so hopelessly addicted to it, and both of us completed all of it. And to this day, she will still open it up and, like, try to get better times or try to get all 3 stars on puzzles. She even downloaded, like, I think all of the DLC as of, like, a month or two ago. And I think they're still adding some more new stuff still.
Oh, I need to open that back up and get some of that stuff.
They have a really cool Nintendo one that has stuff like Rob and Virtual Boy that you can make in Picross forms.
See, I think when you get to the point in the game where I'm at, which is, like I said, somewhere towards the middle or the end of the medium puzzles, you get to a point where there really is only one correct way to progress. Like, halfway through a puzzle, you get stuck, and there's really only one way through. And that one way through is far from obvious.
Yeah.
It all boils down to looking at some of the less obvious clues that are there. Like, I've come across puzzles where I sit there, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, there's nothing here that I can do. And I'll come back to it a day later, and it'll just hit me.
Right.
So the game definitely does make you think. But like I said, before it makes you think, it makes you do a whole bunch of puzzles in a row that are fairly simple. And that's one of the probably one of the only really bad things I can think of about the game is it just has a really protracted tutorial.
I have one minor complaint, very minor, that when you get to the really large puzzles, like the 10x10x10s, you know, and then you see a whole bunch of rows marked zero, meaning you have to knock out every block in the row.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to hold your stylus down to knock them all out, and it does them all in a row, but it takes a long time, kind of a long time. It takes a second. And when you have to do, like, 20 of those in a row, you know, it's like, can you just do this for me, please? You know, but
see, for me, it's so rewarding to just break a block in that game. And just like, there's so much positive reinforcement in almost everything you do in that game. And yeah. I love the satisfaction of completing the puzzle and seeing the little character animate. Like, just really everything about this game from top to bottom is amazing for me.
Now that I think about it, that's a game where the DS would really kind of benefit from like some kind of like a rumble feedback,
some sort of like nicotine expansion pack.
Well, I mean, like on a
it just like, injects heroin into you while you play,
like a haptic feedback, you know, like the sort of real brief and short
when you break a brick.
Yeah
that would be a fantastic addition to that game.
That'd be
actually
fun. Yeah,
that's all I got to say about it.
Picross 3DS.
Across 3DS would be
that would
really
be crazy
fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah,
I would probably just shit my pants out of joy, like just so happy if that happened.
They need to move on to 4D puzzles, four-dimensional puzzles.
Let's go ahead and move on to Nathan. What's your number three?
Mine, I had not planned up until like a couple of days ago. I wouldn't have guessed that I would be doing this. I picked Cave Story DSi, DSiWare. And, you know, like, even last episode of Newscast, I was talking about how I would not buy this game just because of Nintendo's stupid pricing or, you know, points purchasing system, and I'm so glad I did. Like, it's essentially the same as the PC version of the game. And I know we've talked about Cave Story on Newscast before. And, you know, the base game itself is such a great adventure platformer. And when you translate it to the DSi, the graphics work well, or, you know, they look the same as a PC, and the controls are so tight, and it feels great in a portable format. So I'm just finding that, you know, the content hasn't changed, but in this portable format, I'm really loving having Cave Story with me. It's a great game. I don't know if there's anything else we wanted to say about, you know, like, describe it or...
Now, Nathan, I have the WiiWare version of Cave Story. However, my Wii is in the shop for 3 weeks. I mailed it off a couple days ago, and I'm starting to get the itch to play this game. Can you really recommend that I open my DS and spend more money on the DSiWare version of this game?
Same here.
I'm cheap. I'm not the good person to ask. And well, I eventually broke down. So
you did it though, right? I mean,
I did it. I broke down and I got it. I'm happy with it. You know, part of the thing was with the PC version, it was a hassle for me to hook up my controller that I don't normally carry around with me to my laptop. And
like, yeah. I have Shantae, and I haven't even finished that. I haven't even started Shantae.
Then
and
play
I have
that.
I have Dragon Quest IX, and I'm still playing that, although less frequently now. And the last 5 minutes of the show makes me want to play Picross again. Like, I really want to play Cave Story, but God, I know I'm going to buy it and not play it. I just know.
Dude,
don't
get the Lindemans.
Yeah,
I have
play what you got first.
I am hemorrhaging Lindy's right now, and
I've got the Lindy's real bad.
I do too, and I bought a bunch of Steam sale stuff recently that I can't.
Even play that.
Some
Grant.
Of that stuff won't even run on my computer. I'm waiting on a new computer before I can do it.
I did the same thing, Grant, and my graphics card died.
Yeah.
It's not good.
My computer definitely won't run Left 4 Dead 2, but I bought it because it was on sale.
Grant and I both bought Left 4 Dead 2 when it came out on the with the idea that we will play it together once Grant gets a new computer.
But I'll
be there too because I bought it during the $5 sale.
Oh my God, we have to do that. We have to hook that up.
Let's do
Damn it.
Why? You'll rock that.
Why do I just have a netbook?
We can play.
Anyway, so would I get it? I got it and I love it. The thing is, I don't want to say get it and you're not going to play it because, you know, how am I going to, how do I compete with your own laziness? You know, like what?
It's a force to reckon with, I'll tell you what.
If you start playing it, I can't stop playing it, personally.
I put a few hours into the WiiWare version. I didn't get that far, though.
I eventually put Shantae down. I can't imagine I'm not going to finish this.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. I really should play Shantae first, though.
Yeah. See, I gave up, and that's horrible of me, and I shouldn't have, but...
We're both at the same part, aren't we, right before the third dungeon?
Yeah. I think so.
I got to the third dungeon and died before I could save and just got really pissed off and put it down.
All right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's still the same game, you know, but it's portable now. And I find that I enjoy it more in that format. But Grant.
Grant, your number two game is Cave Story for WiiWare.
That's right. So we can keep talking about this game. I was actually on the previous episode where we talked about this in depth. More of the same. But, I really, really like the. Just the controls and the feel of the weapons and the platforming and it all kind of comes together. It feels good. You get the feeling the developers spent a lot of time balancing all those details out, like in terms of how much the fireballs bounce when you shoot them. And
you mean developer.
Developer, one-man show on that.
Say that it feels more like a full retail game than Shantae does? I would definitely say it does.
Than Shantae, I haven't played that, so
I feel like Shantae really does feel like a downloadable game. Like, I think it's a great game through and through, but it feels like, it feels like a side story.
Shantae is very clearly segmented, and they're pretty brief chunks, and it seems like there's a lot of repeated content in it, whereas Cave Story is very fluid and it has a pretty big, expansive narrative. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it feels more like a real game, because obviously Shantae was a real game and it was a real good game. It was great, but I feel Cave Story feels more like a full experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't have to talk that much more about it because we did a whole show on it, but after the other games I've played this year, it's still close to the top of my list. I'm probably gonna play through it again. I went through and I beat it, but I think there's a couple different endings. I think I got like the medium one, maybe. I got the crappy one, and then I went back and I said that's not good enough, and I figured out how to get a better one, but I think there's a even better one I still haven't found. There's actually a couple of rooms in the game, like toward the end, that I've gone into, and I have no idea what they're there for, and I think there's something going on in those rooms. So there's still more for me to find.
It's a crazy, like, there's so many branching paths in that game.
Oh, yeah. I guess for those of you that got the WiiWare version and are thinking about the DSi one, the DSi one has the original music in it, which I actually like a bit more.
Well, the original music is in the WiiWare version, too.
You have to turn it on.
Switch the original graphics, too.
That's right.
Okay, never mind then.
One thing I will say about the game that is kind of a drag is that the map sucks. I don't know.
It does.
It really does. So,
is it any better in the DSiWare version, Nathan?
I don't remember the map from the other one.
It's very, very tiny. You can't zoom in on it. It doesn't connect to the entire world. The entire world doesn't,
I don't think there is a world map.
It's just a map for each individual area you're in.
It's a region map. And
which is pretty useless.
The DSi, it's on the bottom screen when you pull it up. And it's serviceable. I don't know.
A world map would have been a huge help, but, It's not a huge deal.
So let's move on to Andy's number two, which it's something that you reviewed recently.
Fairly recently. In fact, I think I talked about it on the last show. we're looking at some Donkey Kong Country Returns action here, which I have to admit, like, I am kind of shocked at the reaction this game seems to be getting amongst folks on the forums and even people on, like this podcast. I couldn't wait for everyone to play this game because I figured it would be loved by all, but really, it seems like it's a pretty polarizing game.
In defense of my stance on the game right now, is I played, like, because at Nintendo World Store, they have, like, demos of pretty much every recently released Nintendo game, and I figured, I'll play some Donkey Kong Country Returns. And I played some of the first world and just got really frustrated by the motion controls, and that's kind of my excuse as to why I'm not getting it right now, which is more because...
But it killed your interest in the game. Like
it really did, but it's also like, I would totally love to play that game, but I don't really have the money for it or the time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my excuse. You know. It's kind of my excuse to get myself to not be interested in the game, but it also did really annoy me, and I can see playing that game getting really frustrating unless I can keep, you know, the minor OCD that I have in check. Because if I go for all the collectibles on the first playthrough, I'm going to be one unhappy camper because I don't want to have to get on my knees and blow every 5 feet.
I didn't go for any of the collectibles until I had beaten the entire thing. After I beat all eight worlds, I went back and got all of the letters and puzzle pieces from the first world.
So you definitely advise doing that instead?
That's how I prefer to play because I can't. I'm not a perfectionist. I'm not going to sit there and replay the same area over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like A Boy and His Blob. You know, in A Boy and His Blob, I was pretty good about getting all three treasure chests on each stage as I went through the game. Mm-hmm. There came a point somewhere towards like the end of the third world in that game.
Yeah, that was right about the same for me, too.
Where I was just really happy to make it through and wasn't about to go back and play it again.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way I felt with Donkey Kong Country, except for I never really even tried. Like, if I got them all, great. If I could, if I knew I could get them again by throwing away a life and getting it, I would go do that. Like, occasionally they have those mini games where you can only go in them once per life, and if I screwed it up, I may toss a life away to replay that. But, you know, I just really like this game. I feel like the level design is just brilliant. It feels very fluid, like more than any other platformer I can think of in recent memory. It feels fluid, and one of the ways it accomplishes that is by making Donkey Kong feel like an ape, which is just kind of a new thing for that series. The climbing segments in particular really accomplished that, and I loved it. And I haven't really played it too much since I finished the review, mainly because my Wii started messing up on me, and I wanted to move on to another review game, which now is going to be even later because, once again, don't have a Wii right now. But I'm looking forward to playing it again once I get my system back, and I do want to eventually get into that Golden Temple, which unlocks after you collect all the letters. But really love it, and I know, Grant, you said you're going to play it after Christmas. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get that and Kirby for Christmas, so I have not touched those yet. But I hope I get a
gift card or something.
Yeah,
I generally don't get video games from family members, but maybe I'll get a gift card or something along those lines. Because
it would be
a game that I want to get.
Sure. I'll be really curious to hear what both you guys, all three of you guys, think about the game once you play through it a little bit. I was really shocked and kind of disappointed that Johnny didn't like it very much.
You know, I'm gonna almost
that's part of the.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
That's part of the reason why I'm also more down on it is to hear Johnny so down on it, or at least so confused about it, because it seems like he's like, I like it, but, and just hearing that kind of indecision from someone that usually my gaming tastes line up pretty decently with Johnny's.
But then Greg loved it, so that's a good sign. Yeah. That's a good sign, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to almost guarantee that I will like it, because I almost always like games a lot more than most people, with some exceptions, but especially with, like, the core Nintendo games, I almost always love them. Even like Metroid Other M, I liked a lot. And
I did too.
That, it's very mixed. You know, it certainly had big problems, but they were, that game almost made my top three because I liked it a lot, but it just had too many, niggling issues.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like I know whenever I play Donkey Kong Country Returns, I will enjoy it. It just to the degree of how much I will enjoy it. And that's what I'm unsure about. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that I will play that game and enjoy it a lot. It just will it be amazing or will it just be good?
Sure.
There was at least a few times in DKCR where it really felt like Retro was trying to show that they had something to prove. Like, everyone thinks that they're going to put together, you know, they're going to phone it in because they used to do all these awesome sci-fi first-person adventures and now they're just doing platformers. But, like, there was a couple of parts in that game where it really just felt like Retro Studios was like, look, we're awesome at this. Just look how awesome we are at this. Like, I'm really, really impressed with the way they adapted their skill set to this genre. And I honestly, I'm almost more impressed by this game because of what it is than I am with the Metroid Prime series. Because by the third Metroid Prime game, they had really kind of nailed the formula and were just kind of, they were kind of just, you know, they're just doing it again. I mean, the third Metroid Prime game was a lot of fun, but it was the third Metroid Prime game. This is something different. I kind of like it. So yeah, Donkey Kong Country Returns. Loved it. Can't wait to hear what you guys think about it. And with that, we'll go ahead and move on to Nathan's number two.
Yeah, my number two was Dragon Quest IX. And I know
hell of a game.
Andy played it, right? Grant,
yes.
Did you play it?
No, I didn't. I'm actually, you know, I'm not an RPG person. I've gotten into very, very few RPGs. So I don't know. But from what everybody says about this thing, I might have to give it a try.
This may be the one to check out.
Sure. The only RPG I've ever finished that I can remember is Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story. So
that's a great game.
So it's very good, and it's because of the action elements to the battles. But anyway,
yeah,
I know that's unique. So it's probably not.
I mean, this is definitely a very traditional RPG, but it's a very accessible traditional RPG.
Yes, I would very much agree with that. The story is pretty engaging right off the bat, which is kind of a change of pace. I remember the Dragon Quest VIII story took a while to get going.
Yeah. The overarching story is kind of, it's not a big deal, but it's like,
no, it's not.
It doesn't waste any time.
It's little vignettes, you know, so
which I think are really well done.
It is. It's way better to play in a portable form because you can spend maybe a day on one of the story chunks and feel like you've played through a whole story arc.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next time you want to go adventuring, then you go to maybe the next town or you spend time getting items to alchemize or whatever. But you can play it in a very segmented manner and still feel like you've accomplished something each time,
which
I really enjoy.
I have a question. I have... You know, like I said, not very many RPGs I've played, but I've played some of Final Fantasy III Remake on DS.
Mm-hmm.
How similar is Dragon Quest to Final Fantasy in terms of, you know, how the game plays and the structure and all that good stuff?
I've never played Final Fantasy III.
I would say they're very different. I played through Final Fantasy III on the DS, and it feels a lot more old. At the end of the day, you are playing a Japanese RPG, you know, turn-based. You're picking fire moves, ice moves, attack, you know, defend. But I just think that Dragon Quest IX is a lot more accessible and quick-paced.
Yeah.
Whereas the Final Fantasy games, especially the older ones, it really feels like there's more of like a mystery surrounding the combat. I don't remember what the system was in Final Fantasy III.
That's the job system, I know. That's like the game with the job system.
Sure. Oh, but it was like the light job system, right? Where you couldn't switch around and stuff.
I know that
Final Fantasy V really let you mess with the job system. And,
yeah, that game's awesome, by the
customized
way.
Stuff. And yeah, it was kind of like the precursor to Final Fantasy Tactics.
Well, I will say that I played Final Fantasy III for about half an hour and found it really uninteresting.
The whole thing's kind of bland, really.
Back to Dragon Quest IX, the vignettes are wonderful, too, and as far as with the battle system, I guess in comparison to Final Fantasy III,
it's a little more snappy.
Yeah, what does that such a good service is that it's not just like the first-person view where you just have like the images of the enemies. Like you are watching. It's like it still plays the same way where you're selecting from a menu and it's turn-based, but then you watch everything acted out by your characters in, you know, like your 3D models of your character fighting 3D models of the enemies, and it's really entertaining to watch. It has like cinematic camera angles,
and you got that in Final Fantasy III as well. But I would say that the dramatic element of combat is played up much more highly in Dragon Quest IX.
Do the characters actually touch each other?
Yes.
They
jump across and hit things. It's not like the guy swings and you see all the slashes hit the enemies.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Good.
No.
Well, and like one of the things...
And it's cool because characters will actually run around the field, and so will monsters. And a lot of times it doesn't really make sense what's going on, like, why is this guy all of a sudden all the way over here? But at the same time, it lends definitely a more cinematic, touch to the combat, because it feels like they're running around a field just beating each other up.
One of the really nice touches on Dragon Quest IX for character customization is the fact that the gear that you wear in the game, the armor and the weapons and stuff, actually show up on your character as you run around.
And it's like it's kind of dumb, as in that like blue jeans are better than like fucking chainmail sometimes. Right. But it's like it's cool how they do it, where it's not just like, I guess, the stuff that would realistically make the most sense is the best. It's also like just stuff that looks cool will be really good for defense too.
Right. I would say a big part of what kept me playing Dragon Quest IX was also just how it looked. You know, in game, the backdrops
level 5.
Were gorgeous.
I mean, we got so far the games we've been talking about, Professor Layton and Dragon Quest IX, both developed by Level 5. They are a wonderful developer.
They kill it. It comes very close to mimicking the PS2 Dragon Quest 8 style.
Yeah, it does. It's pretty fantastic.
I need to play that game one of these days. I've heard nothing but wonderful things.
I liked it for about 8 hours, and then I lost interest.
I would say at this point, no.
Don't
just
bother.
Wait for 10. I tried to get back into 8, and it... I don't know if it's just me, but I can't sit down in front of the TV and play that kind of game anymore. I just can't.
I kind of agree, in all honesty. I mean, I'm actually looking to get Dragon Quest IV on DS because I'd never played that. But I do have to say, because Johnny actually listens to Newscast, so thank you, Johnny, because when he stopped reviewing games for the site, that was, I guess, 2 months before Dragon Quest V came out. And he reviewed Dragon Quest IV, and I read that review that he wrote, and I was really interested by it. And he already had the review reserved for Dragon Quest V. So when he stepped down from doing reviews, that was left open. So I was like, well, you know, Dragon Quest IV seemed really interesting. I'll review V. And I fucking loved that game. And that was the first Dragon Quest game I had played in probably 10 years at the time.
I would say if you liked V, go back and play IV instead of trying to tackle 8. Because
I played 5 and loved 5, and then Dragon Quest IX immediately became one of my most anticipated games.
Yeah. Tackle 4, and then, you know, we're getting 6 soon enough. So
hopefully.
We'll get it. Please.
Well, maybe we'll get an 8 and 8 remake on 3DS. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Dragon Quest IX is just a wonderful game, and I really hope that this discussion... when I get off the show, I like play it before I go to bed, because I put fucking 40 hours in that game.
I'm playing through it again
4 days because of the review, and then after that, I had to basically kick myself of the habit because I kept on playing it. And it was just like I wasn't playing anything else, and I wasn't really doing much of anything else. I was just like, I'm just gonna play more Dragon Quest IX. And I finally kicked myself of the habit, and I've been kind of wanting to get back into it, but it's just like it's been a struggle because I know. If I start playing it, I'm not going to want to stop, and I hope that this gets me into over that hump, because I don't really have anything to play.
I'm playing through it again as a solo character to kind of, you know, mimic the Dragon Quest I experience. It's pretty tough. But
that actually sounds like fun. Maybe because it's been such a long time since I've gone back to it. Maybe I will just restart. And
That's actually one of the great things about Dragon Quest IX
is that you can play how you want.
Yeah.
You know,
I kind of like that you can just add and subtract party members to your party, and there's no ill consequences of doing it.
Right.
It's
it's a very customizable game. I mean, when it comes down to it, you can pursue getting all the ingredients to make your own weapons and items and stuff, or you could just save up and buy them. They're expensive as hell, but you know, if you just want to grind it out and get them, you can do that. And there are all the grottos and endgame content that you can just completely miss if you just kind of want the main story arc. But it lets you play to the degree that you want. And I really like that.
Right on.
I do too.
Yeah. So that's all our number two games. And oddly enough, we all have the same number one game. Andy Grant and I.
Yes. Mine's different.
Neil, you stupid.
What is it?
Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Yes.
Oh, that old thing?
Yeah, that old thing.
Came out back in May. Still pretty damn good. So, all right. Now, I mean, I'll tell my story in that this game did not make my top three, which you will find out what's in my top three in the next episode. And part of the reason why it didn't is because, I mean, I thought it was it was really well done and everything, but to me it just didn't hook me as much as Galaxy did. Like Galaxy, like, you know, I blazed through that game. I loved the shit out of it. And when I played Galaxy 2, I had a lot of fun with it, and it just felt like, I guess, the things that I overlooked in Galaxy 1 and Galaxy 2 stood out, like, to be more glaring, like the shitty boss fights with Bowser, and some of the stars seemed to be, like, kind of, like, silly in their presentation, especially near the end when I was, like, you know, getting through the last stars to get to 120. It just, I don't know, it didn't hook me as much, so...
Well, you know,
why am I wrong?
I have to agree with that.
I'd agree, Neil. I think that, yeah, definitely you do start to notice the hitches in the design a little bit more, and how some of the stars are just kind of, you know, trite. But,
yeah.
Well, the reason it made my number one, Neil, is that because of all the games I played this year and in, you know, just years, period, it has the most moments of just unbridled joy. For some reason, I will just be sitting there like a 2-year-old on my couch gleaming.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely, yeah, there are moments like that that happened to me in that game. It's just that was more what, I mean, I'm kind of giving away one of my top three, but that's like what Kirby was for me, where I would just smile like a 2-year-old gleaming. And that definitely happened for me in Super Mario Galaxy 2, but I guess not to the degree that I expected or that made me, you know, completely adoringly love the game. I mean, I'm not saying that I hate the game. I don't hate fun. It's just that it's not my number one game of the year.
Really, we know that's actually the problem.
Yeah, I hate fun things. Yeah.
Well, to some extent, it's hard to be super excited about what is basically a known commodity. From the moment they announced Galaxy 2, it was very clear that you already knew how much you were going to enjoy it. Because it was exactly what
it was. Yeah, but there was so much more cool shit. There was like the Shadow Marios, there's Yoshi.
But I mean, it was exactly what it claimed to be. It was more of Super Mario Galaxy, which is a great thing. But it also is not a surprising thing. And a large amount of how much you enjoy a game often boils down to how much you're surprised by it. That said, I still put it as my number one game. I don't think I played a game this year that I felt was as well made as Mario Galaxy 2. Well, I'm not entirely sure I had the most fun playing it, even though I put it at my number one. I just felt like it was the best game. It was the game that if I hadn't played Mario Galaxy 1, I would have been floored by it.
I think the core part of Galaxy 1 and Galaxy 2 is that they do as much as they can to innovate all the time on an individual level basis. And so, really, they're still innovating, and not each star, but a lot of the stars are very unique, and you're doing something that you haven't done in a Mario game before a lot of the time. But, you know, it does end up feeling like it's very, very similar to Galaxy 1, when really you are doing different things.
Well, there's only so much you can do within the scope of the Mario universe. Like,
It's true. Jumping on something to do something, right?
But or you're pointing your cursor at something.
Yeah. I guess the base mechanical level of interaction with the game is the same, but when you...
The level
you know,
design
what you're
is fantastic.
Doing feels different, and yeah, the levels you're going through.
Definitely.
And I really think very few games have, at the level of Mario Galaxy 2, graphics and sound that work together well.
The music? Can we just talk about the music for a minute?
It's so good.
I mean, it's a lot of remixes from the first Galaxy, but my God, those two Mario Galaxy games have probably the best soundtrack of any first party game from Nintendo that I can remember.
They're fantastic. Well, and they work so well visually with the game, you know, with the visual aspect of the game, just to create such a, you know, a cohesive theme or feel to the game. It's really
that is definitely
from Mario
it's
Galaxy.
Very very memorable music.
It is. I mean, when you hear it when they play it on RFN, it's just oh my God, I want to be playing it right now.
Absolutely.
You know what I really liked? When Yoshi gets the hot pepper, and isn't there that level where it like plays like the song from Super Mario World, which is just it's so good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's a game that everyone's talked about, you know, and talked about almost the same points with Galaxy 1, but it's outstanding.
It really is. I mean, despite me kind of hating on it a little bit, like I can't like the game's amazing. It's just that I don't know. Yeah.
It's just that you have a cold heart.
Yeah, I have a dark, cold little heart, and I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like how in Galaxy 2 they made Luigi a viable alternative instead of a bonus unlockable.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool, although it makes the, I guess, does anybody know if you get anything for getting all the stars, or?
I don't want to know.
I have no idea.
And you know what, I would say right now that I don't want a Mario Galaxy 3, but at the same time, I would have said, like, if someone had asked me, do you want another Super Mario Galaxy, or do you want Nintendo to do something new? Well, I'll be honest, what would you have said? I would have said no.
Yeah, probably.
So, 3 may be pushing it, but I think 3DS maybe. Yeah. Andy's right.
If someone were to put a new Super Mario Galaxy in front of me, I would not reject it, but it would be cool to see them do something new with the series.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, I kind of feel like they've done the 3D platformer really as far as they can go. So if they do another 3D Mario game, they have to do something pretty vastly different than they've done yet.
Yeah.
More different than Galaxy.
You know what
was.
I want to see with the next Mario more than anything else? I want them to get a new analogy for switching between worlds. I think that's really what they need.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fantastic. How about online multiplayer? Wouldn't that be something else?
Yeah, maybe, whoa. But really, at a basic level, the jump from square to square to get to a new level, I think that there needs to be a new, there needs to be something new for that. Because it doesn't make sense. I know they've said, like, oh, you're moving between planets with a spaceship, and that kind of makes a little more sense. But, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, is that it?
Yeah,
Mario
not
Galaxy
to end
that
on a downer. It's a fantastic game. And
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Mario Galaxy 2 is all three of our number one picks. And except with that, we're going, well, that's all the three of us who are listing off our picks.
Yes.
I would say. Once again, Neil, Zach, and Carl Castaneda will be doing their three picks on the next episode. And with that in mind, let's go ahead and close down for our top three games of the year. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there's going to be a little bit of a post game. The three of us are going to be talking about games that we played and loved this year that weren't from Nintendo or on Nintendo systems.
And so, because it's late as shit by me, I'm gonna peace out.
And Neil's gonna bid us farewell.
I hope you all enjoyed this rather big ass episode.
Neil's actually been asked to leave. Don't pretend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Guys, Neil. Guys, I thought you said you weren't gonna say that.
Have the dignity at least. It's because you hate Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Yeah,
and
you guys just don't like me anymore.
All the listeners understand.
So, Neil, have a good night.
Yeah. Email newscast@nintendoworldreport.com if you want to comment on any of these guys' games of the year or anything else that we talked about.
Or any of the virtual console games that we didn't, fully explain.
Yeah, or really any game that we don't fully get, or if there's something on DSiWare or WiiWare that we missed, that's really cool.
We did get some more listener mail that we didn't get a chance to read off because it involved research that we hadn't done yet.
And
so,
also, if you can't tell, this episode's long as shit to begin with.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
But
so hopefully we'll get to your listener mail soon if you wrote in and didn't hear a letter on the show. But it's really nice to actually start to get some feedback from listeners. It's fantastic. We love getting your emails, so keep them coming.
Newscast@nintendoworldreport.com.
Tell your friends. Tell all of your friends at least once today.
And we
only
have a Twitter.
The
Twitter's occasionally updated. That's NWR underscore newscast, or is it just NWR newscast?
Just NWR newscast, no underscore.
All right, NWR newscast. Check us out on Twitter. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks, and then we're going weekly.
Woo!
Yep.
Woohoo! All right,
so stick around. On the other side of the break, we are going to have our non-Nintendo honorable mention game of the year type deal.
Yes.
All right, see ya.
Excellent. See ya. Bye.
Okay, and we are back, sans Neil, thank God.
I know, right?
That guy.
That damn guy.
What a drag. What a drag.
Oh, I hate Mario Galaxy 2.
I don't think it's the best game ever.
Sorry, I hate Mario Galaxy 2. Is that better?
Yes.
That's more realistic.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry,
Anyways,
Neil.
Anyways, So we're going to talk about our favorite, like, non-Nintendo games here. Want to start off with Grant, perhaps?
All right.
Our guest?
Yep, my favorite game of the last year.
A game that I bought, but I Lindy'd.
Right? It is StarCraft II for the PC, and technically I suppose it's StarCraft II Wings of Liberty because it's just the Terran campaign part so far. But it's really good. If you've played StarCraft, you know the basic mechanics. It's a real-time strategy game. The thing I like about it, I've played a few real-time strategy games. I really like the simplicity of the StarCraft series. It's easy to grasp in terms of the way you control it, the way you command your troops. The graphics on this one are really, really nice, but they're really scalable because it runs on my 2008 MacBook that has an integrated graphics card, and it can look really good if you have the power to make it look really good. The campaign, I should say that the first StarCraft I loved, and 99% of what I played in the first StarCraft was just the campaign mode because I really sucked at multiplayer and I never got into it. I know a lot of people play StarCraft just for multiplayer, but I really liked the single player on it, and I played it through it two or three times because the mission design was really good, the scripting was really good. The story, while it was fairly typical sci-fi type war stuff, was interesting to me at the time. So the current game, I was really interested in trying out the campaign, and the great thing about it is how they've polished up the presentation. The in-between game stuff is really cool. You're kind of on a spaceship, and you can move around to different rooms and talk to different characters, and you can do kind of side missions almost, and you can buy upgrades to your units, and you can spend research points on new technologies. So it's a lot more customizable than the previous StarCraft game. They've really blown up the single player portion of it. And
They also limit it to one of the races for now?
Well, yes. The what they've got released is the Terran campaign, but the length of the single player game is as long or longer than the entire first StarCraft game, so I don't feel too shabby.
Wow.
Yeah.
The game is pretty extensive.
It's about 30 missions, which is exactly how long the first game was, so it's still a long game. It's all Terran, but you can play as Zerg or Protoss in multiplayer, and you can play a few Protoss missions in single player too. Because they're kind of bonus missions. So the rest of the single player game is going to be released in expansion packs. So they're kind of milking you for all the cash they can get. But if the rest of the expansions are the same length as this game, they're basically three full games. So it's basically a trilogy if you look at it that way. So I don't feel too bad about that. And Terran's was always my favorite race to play by far. So I'm fine with the current game. So, I don't want to get too deep into it, into how the game plays and all the details. But I will say that there are a few refinements that are really, really welcome and make the game a blast to play. The main one for me is you can queue up commands for people. So, especially for the workers, you can tell the worker to build, a string of buildings all at once and just leave them alone, and then he will go build exactly in the order you tell them to, and you couldn't do that in the first game, and it really streamlines everything. So it's just it's StarCraft, but it's polished and it's streamlined, and it's just a lot of fun. So if you're into StarCraft, you know there's really no reason not to get this.
Are the characters the same as the first game?
Several of them are. The main character is Jim Raynor, who is pretty much the main character of the human race in the first game, and Kerrigan is like the girl who kind of gets turned into a Zerg, and she is the main enemy in this game. So, they've kept a lot of the main characters. They've added new ones, of course, but
right.
There's a lot of continuity. The stories do tie together. It would help to have played the first game, though. You can get what's going on if you haven't played the first game.
I seem to recall trying to play through the first game and then getting like 8 missions in and just falling flat, like just never being able to pass a mission.
Yeah,
which has always been one of
that
my...
That can happen, and it's really hard. You can't... There's no way to kind of skip a level. One of the really great things about this game is that there's multiple branches so that you can, you know, at any given time, or most of the time, there's like 3 branches going on, and they're like mini subplots. And if you get stuck on a mission in one of the branches, you just go to a different one. And then when you do that, you can earn research points and earn, you know, ways to upgrade your tech, and then you can go back to the level you got stuck on and probably beat it more easily. So it's, you know, you can get around that problem way better in this game. So it's, you know, They've really put a lot of thought into the structure of the single player game on this.
Awesome.
Yep. So, you know, it's possibly, you know, my favorite game of the year overall, you know, above the Nintendo stuff, but that's just because I have a crazy amount of nostalgia for the first StarCraft. So I really
do. They let you play through the campaign co-op?
No, there is co-op in the multiplayer. That's just co-op versus, you know, AI, but it's not
sure.
It's not the campaign, which is unfortunate. Okay. That would be great.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Sure.
I've always kind of wanted to play through the StarCraft, the first StarCraft, but I just, nowadays, it looks so dated that it's really hard for me to want to sit down there and look at those graphics for a couple hours. But
yeah,
someday I really need to force myself to play through that series.
Sure. I think
so. I'm still sort of at a point where I prefer Warcraft 2 as my go-to RTS, which is really a holdover from 1996 that probably needs updating. Nathan, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, but I don't have much to say about StarCraft. It's sitting on my computer. I need to play it.
Well,
right
Nathan,
now,
if you get on there and you find me, I can school you on the online. Except I probably won't because I'm not very good at multiplayer. But
well, I know some keyboard shortcuts, so look out.
Oh yeah, I know like 2 of those. All right, so that's probably my game of the year overall, StarCraft II. Play it.
Okay. You sold me.
That's a commit.
Not really, but maybe eventually.
Well, it's $60. So, you know, actually, you know, that's a bit steep. So if you can, I would say if you find it somewhere for less than $60, I don't think
so. The problem is I've been Lindy-ing Warcraft 3 for so long that it's hard for me to want to pick up StarCraft 2, you know what I mean?
Oh. Sure, yeah, I understand. Yeah, well, it's good. If somebody gives it to you as a present,
don't throw it away.
All right. Don't throw it away.
Done.
Yeah.
Done and done.
Probably a good idea.
All right.
So the game I was going to talk about is a little iPhone game. You can stop listening now if you want. It's a little game called Game Dev Story. It came out about a month and a half ago, maybe. And it's sort of crazy. I'm sure you probably heard about it. I mean, it was all over the internet for a couple weeks there, but basically Game Dev Story is a game developer simulator sort of it's like an old school sim game for iPhone. You play as a small development team and you start off. The game has a fixed length of 20 years. And you start off and you're developing for PC or for like what essentially boils down to like the old Atari systems. Although they have different names. But yeah, you just sort of, you pick like a genre of game and then like a setting, like a robot action game or like a ninja puzzle game or something like that. You kind of mix and match the genre to the format. And those things, when they match up well, your game does better and you get better critical reviews. So every game that you put out, you have to choose if you're going to use your in-house development team or outsource it for a little bit more money to get better graphics and whatnot. You can pay like a really high profile artist to come in and do your art for you, but it's going to cost a pretty penny. And then after your game comes out, it gets reviewed in a magazine and, you know, your scores will add up to, you know, help you get a bigger fan base and then the game sells, and then however well the game sells, you use that money to go into your next game. And it's just sort of, you know, it's really addictive. I think I picked this game up with the intent of just kind of trying it out at like 8 o'clock in the morning and played it for 12 hours straight. I could not put it down. I got all the way through the 20-year cycle and then played it again. Not all the way through exactly the second time straight through, but I played it for probably 12 hours straight. And then another couple hours the next day, and then kept going and kept going. It's hard to even really explain the appeal to it. It is very much a sim, even though it's, you know, got a little bit of cutesy flavor to it. But I really liked it. You can attend like an E3 kind of show, and if you want, you can hire booth babes, or you can hire an animal mascot to accompany you and help grow your fan base. And
I played this game too. And did you play this, Nathan?
No, I'm being stupid. Now I only buy stuff if there's an iPad version.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's mostly, okay, let me qualify that. It's because I'm an iPod Touch second generation, so a lot of stuff just doesn't run right.
Sure, and yeah. Well, this one will
this
run.
This one should this run. One I mean, it's like 8-bit graphics.
It's the cool thing, it's like isometric pixel art kind of graphics. It's very cool. I've played this too, and I had almost the same experience. I bought it and I played it. I didn't get through the whole cycle, but I played, for several hours straight. I kind of got to a plateau where I wasn't able to make much more money for my games. And, you know, there's a lot of factors, like, in terms of how well your game does. Like, you can advertise, you can research and get your staff, you know, give them research points so they're better at certain things. You can hire new people and you can hire outside help. And, like, all of those things you can do completely differently for every game.
Well, of course, the genres come and go with popularity as well.
And the genres go – every time you do a new genre or a new game type, you gain a level on it. There's kind of a lot of RPG elements to this too, because you level up your characters, you level up your game genres. So, you know, and it's hard to know, you know, if you level up your adventure games, does that mean you should keep doing adventure games every single time because you get better at them? But over time, your fan base starts to, dwindle because they see the same thing from you all the time. So it's kind of mimicking real life market outcomes.
Well, you have to be very careful. You have to be very careful because the consoles that you're developing for also have their own market shares. So you gotta, if you want to develop on the biggest, baddest console, you have to buy a license. And those licenses start to get extremely expensive down the road.
Right. And those consoles have life cycles. And if you hop onto a console late in its life cycle, you might not get your money's worth. So it's, there's a lot of real world analogies to these things, and it's almost like a commentary on the video game business in a way. So it's really interesting. If you're interested in video games, it's there's a lot of depth here.
So this is a chance for you to finally live out your dream of becoming a Virtual Boy developer. So
that's right. There is a Virtual Boy analog in the game. Like almost every game system of the last 20 years has like a fake version with a funny name in this game. So that's pretty cute. If you know a lot about video game history, you'll get a kick out of those names.
Absolutely.
Like what are a couple of those? Are there any?
The Super all Fighter? The stuff from Nintendo is called Intrendo.
Well, there's, Intrendo as the IES.
The Super IES, and the GameCube is like the, the Game Box, I think.
The Game Box.
It would have to be. That's what my mom actually called it.
I think the Sony was called the Sony. It was the Play Status. It was called the Play Status.
And the Play Status. Like, and then there was a Wonder Swan.
Yeah, there was a Wonder Swan thing. There was the Game Kid, and the Game
Kid, right? And Virtual Kid, I think, right. Like that.
There was a Game Gear too. There's a lot of direct correlations to the actual game industry. It's a lot of fun. I would recommend picking up even on iPad. I think it would probably look pretty good because it would scale up to just being.
It probably would.
It's pixel art already, so it would just be big pixel art.
You may actually get some good playtime out of that on iPad. I think on iPad it'd actually be really nice because there's so many menus on that it feels kind of cramped.
Yeah, the buttons are kind of small sometimes.
So you may actually enjoy that on iPad.
I will look at it after this.
Go for it.
See.
And what's the price on that?
It was $3, I think, when I bought it.
That's a lot, but, you know.
It might be lower. For some reason, I think I got it on sale for like 99 cents.
That'd be good.
But it's probably not there anymore.
So we got one more.
Well, a game that was not 99 cents, but it was only $12, was my favorite game of the year by far, Minecraft.
Oh, yes.
Minecraft.
Oh, holy crap. What an awesome game out of nowhere. I know that it was kind of in its early stages. I think maybe it was in its infancy even last year. I'm not sure. But, you know, the game took off and went for sale this year. And it is, we talked about it, obviously, on a previous post-game newscast, but it's a giant, like, survival Lego set for grown-ups. Yeah. And it's awesome. It is awesome. And I've already said, I've already blabbed on about it. And I play it even more than when I was talking about it then. It is the game I go to. And
I had kind of stopped playing kind of fairly shortly after we talked about it that one time. But I recently kind of got into the multiplayer game, and I found the multiplayer game to be a whole new ball of wax in terms of just compelling gameplay content. I think one of the reasons I really like the multiplayer is that your stuff is sort of it feels like your stuff has more relevance to it if it exists in a world where someone else can see it. If I build a little house in my own little Minecraft game on my computer and I delete it, that's fine. It's gone. It's off my computer. But if I build it in a world where other people are inhabiting, I've taken a part of their world and claimed it for my own. It's like my own little version of Manifest Destiny. I love it.
Well, I previously played locally with a friend or a couple friends, and then now I've started to play more online on a friend's server. And yeah, it's really cool how you carve out your own chunk into that world. And it's like, oh, this is Nathan's place.
Exactly.
And I think that's so cool.
And like,
because, you know, like, you're all sharing the same resources inside the game, but the world's so expansive that it's not really an issue.
Right, exactly.
Like, oh, this guy's taking all the wood. Or...
I have a question about this. I've played a little bit of it. I haven't got too deep in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that the servers, as they are, like, you kind of, you know, set up your own world.
Right.
And you can invite people to it.
Yeah.
So each one is only going to have, you know, the people that you know personally or the people that you want to invite. Are there plans to turn this into more of an MMO style where everybody's in the same giant?
There are already servers that people host that have 1,000 members.
Oh, yeah. See, that's kind of where the potential is for me. It seems like if you got that many people to crowdsource,
there are servers where they built giant, you know, pyramids and amazing structures.
Yeah.
And these ones, they actually turn on the survival elements. So it's not like they have infinite blocks. Everything that they built, they've had to mine from the world. And
that's
it's
cool.
Awesome. And people, and everyone has their own little place in the game. And like you could set up admin stuff so that, you know, people can't go out of control with TNT and blow up other people's structures.
Yeah. That's
and the great. Like.
We'll see,
you can enforce that in game.
The server that I've been playing on is a fairly low key server. There's only about, I think, maybe 5 to 10 regular users in it. But still, they've built an amazing amount of content. One of the things that I really thought was cool was, you know, I built a little house and I built a pool in the backyard and a water slide and a diving board off that pool. But then like 2 days later, they extended their railroad track to right in front of my front door. So how cool was that? It was like all of a sudden I had personal transportation.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's really fantastic.
I love stuff like that.
The server that I'm playing on, the spawn point for when you first log in, is the entrance to this giant, labyrinth. They don't let anybody just come on and mess with their stuff because they don't want someone to connect and start ruining their world. So in order to gain access to the server, you have to complete the labyrinth, which will then lead you to a sign where you can email someone for access. Now when I connected, there was a guy on the forum that I share with him that, you know, he recognized my name and I recognized his. So he was happy to help me through it, which was actually good because I'm not entirely sure I ever would have been able to complete it without his help, because it was very dark in there, and it was just kind of hard to find my way around, and I never even found the exit room where you have a choice of 12 potential exits where you must decipher clues to pick the right one. I never even found the room with the exits without his help guiding me along, so. And so basically, what that basically wow. means is, if you have the patience to get through that, you're not going to go in there and just ruin everything. So it's actually, it's a really right. nice little, like, homemade safeguard against internet griefing, which is, it just makes the world that much cooler, I think. I don't know.
Well, the great thing about it is that was not made by the developer. That was something the users Absolutely. Put together. It's like, this is right. like the most, like, user, one of the most user, created type games that I've ever
It's filled with that buzzword, emergent gameplay. You know, stuff that developers didn't really intend, but it just sort of happens because the community does it. And that's another great thing about Minecraft. And that's really expanded in the weeks since we've talked about it. A lot more people have gotten way into it online, and they've added more features to the, you know, the online mode to bring it up to parity with the single player mode.
Do you guys like the combat aspect of it?
No.
It kind of seemed like a bit of a turnoff.
No, it is. It's definitely the worst part of the game for me.
Because I don't want to, you know, worry when I'm building something. You know, part of the reason I haven't gotten too far is because I know I have a time limit before it gets dark and I have to run around and you know, I'll probably get killed. Because I haven't gotten far enough in the game to even get weapons or, you know, I'm really...
Okay, well, you can get weapons... Right off the bat, you can get it.
Yeah,
maybe
I know.
A minute.
What I need to do is get into a walkthrough and figure that out.
One of us can walk you through it on Skype, Grant.
I'm gonna have to.
You know, just come on server with me and, you know, see. Host one at my house,
but even the fact that I have to worry about that has been kind of.
Yeah, and it's a little rough, you know, because there's no tutorial for the game, but
sure, that's what they need. They really need one.
They do, yeah. But
that'll come. I think that'll come.
I think what I was talking about is I don't like the mechanics of the combat. It just feels, feel very satisfying when you're hitting stuff, you know?
Right.
Maybe that's because of how the hitboxes work.
Good ideas in the combat. Like the idea of craft your own weapon and use it to defend yourself against the bad guys that come out at night. Like that's a really compelling idea. But it's not executed with all that much finesse at the moment.
I just feel like when I'm fighting something, there's not too much connection between the enemy's animations and the actual thing, the way it's hitting me. For some reason, I feel like I can't really predict and avoid its hits. Go ahead.
I will say that on the server that I've been playing on, the monsters are turned off entirely, as is the health bar. So you just can't die.
It is fun. Grant, you can turn it off in the single player.
I kind of like it this way in the multiplayer because it gives me a chance to really kind of learn the idea behind multiplayer Minecraft without worrying about dying. So maybe someday I'd actually kind of like them to turn it on. My server was doing a vote. They had a warp point. You warp to the vote. You warp to the voting booth. You jump down a giant pit to the bottom of this giant pit. And then they had four chests. They had one chest that had a whole bunch of steaks, like meat steaks. And then they had three other chests that represented voting options. And you place, you take a steak from the first chest and you place it in one of the other three. And the options were, do you want monsters? Do you want monsters plus health bar removal? Like they had the three different options for monster enabling. And they wanted to know what the users thought about it. And so basically you just take a stake from the first chest and put it in one of the other chests, depending on your vote. And then you left. And
see, I happen to really enjoy the element of risk that it adds. So it sounds like your server opted to take out the monsters and all the health, but there's something fun about collaborating against them.
I'm sure there is. I absolutely believe that there is. I'm kind of enjoying learning this part of the game without worrying about it, but I definitely agree that it's a fun part of the game I've liked that part of the game in the single player, but it definitely makes the game more stressful.
Yeah, I like the danger it adds. I just don't like the nitty-gritty of actually fighting the monsters.
Right.
And it's actually a little better if you're using a ranged weapon. but then it takes a while to craft all the arrows and stuff you need.
Sure.
But it's fun, you know. One thing I would complain about is that sometimes creepers can just completely sneak up on you, and all of a sudden part of your house is gone because they've exploded. And that's happened to me far too many times. But it's still in the works. You know, it's not even in beta yet.
They just announced the beta was coming a couple weeks here.
On the 20th. Yeah, the beta's coming on the 20th. I don't know if there's going to be a gigantic jump in quality. I know he has hired on some staff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they've been really hard at work on stuff behind the scenes, and we're going to
see. He said he's adding endgame content, which kind of makes me wonder.
Really?
Like, not
there is no...
How's that?
There is no content. I don't know what he means. Like, all the content is you make it.
Aren't there little mini?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. There are. There are spawn.
There are like spawn points.
And there are chests.
Well, there are caves that have chests in them.
There are. Okay, if that's what you mean. They're randomly. I thought you meant like maybe something with a storyline or anything.
Oh no.
No. But it's possible that he could turn. You know, he could. Be planning on turning those into more full-fledged.
Well, I think maybe he just means there will be more things you can't see in the game until you've done a lot of groundwork.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I interpret that.
Sure. I think he needs a lot more environmental variation.
He's added that. He's added
weather.
Okay, well, that's good.
There are different biomes now. So there are desert environments. There are snowy environments. There are even within the same world. Even in the same world.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
Like,
because it didn't used to be.
Now. Yeah. Right now, the place I'm sitting at, on one side I have like a sort of a tropical island archipelago, and behind me there are some really tall snowy mountains where all the water on the coast is frozen.
Oh, cool.
That's great.
It's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, good. They fixed that part.
Yeah.
Good.
And
so it's work in progress.
And I guess we talked a lot already about Minecraft before. We're doing it again.
Yeah,
I can just talk about it almost endlessly. I think for people that are interested in it and haven't played it yet, go ahead and try out the free version online. He's also adding a demo of the single player come the 20th. And there's another podcast that I'd like to just sort of mention called The Shaft. And it's a Minecraft-centric podcast. So if you're already playing, or if you're just curious about it, I mean, listen to it. It's great. They talk about stuff they'd like to see in the game, new stuff they've done on their server.
Right.
Stuff that's been added so you can keep up to date with all the patches and such. It's a good podcast, and it's kind of what we're doing here, but, you know, far more in-depth and weekly. So.
Fantastic.
The Shaft.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I think that'll about wrap it up for this this first episode of the Best of 2010. So, with that in mind, we'll see you in a few weeks. Say farewell, Grant, because he won't be seeing us in a few weeks. But
farewell.
Bye, Grant.
We'll see you one more time in 2010, and then we're off to the great pasture of 2011. So, good night, everyone, and thanks for tuning in.
Bye for today.
Oh, Lordy.
Okay, edit that.